Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of By the Numbers, the quintessential Counter-Strike podcast. I'm your host, Richard Lewis. Joining me, as he always does, is Duncan Thorin Shields, Sam Bainlaw Davis. When are you going to change that fucking gamer handle from Bainlaw? It's fucking street garbage.
Street casting Instagram. Spells and shit, aren't I?
I know, mate. Grow the fuck up, mate. It's just embarrassing.
I've got ones. But,
I'm already dreading this show. Like I thought this will be this one will be by the numbers because we've got an event to talk about. We don't need to go off message. Don't need to fill it with anything too crazy. And then I saw Duncan, first of all, in an unknown location. So he's on the road doing something mental, probably hiding from the police. And he was just sat in his chair drinking from this like brown bottle, like just long necking it, right? And I was like, oh, he's drinking the hard shit. This is going to be a mad
Newcastle
show.
Newcastle Brown Ale, you thought, maybe?
Maybe, but what the fuck are you drinking, mate?
Just drinking a Brothers Toffee Apple Cider. It's the future.
It's not the future, is it? It's
it is.
Not
the
it Toffee is. Apple Cider.
Delicious. Tastes just like toffee apples. Although I never understood the point of toffee apple. You bite it and you go, toffee, there's an apple inside. What demented cunt would do this? I want to eat an apple, I'm just eating apple. Give me toffee. Why not make it shaped like an apple, but just be toffee? It's a stupid concept, isn't it?
Some people do like fruit, Duncan, you know? It's like
the fucking Bible. We've moved on since then. Got fucking
Jesus, Duncan Thorin Shields calls out Christians.
Fucking love fruit and that, don't they?
All right, anyway. Let's just start with a bit of meta talk, because obviously we're gonna talk about DreamHack Marseille, that we actually had an event to talk about this weekend. And it was a good one, actually. Lots of stuff sort of coming out of it. Some stuff is going to be a revisiting of old ground, in particular when it comes to Na'Vi, so I can't wait for that. But let's just start with a little thing. I saw, like, a few threads on Reddit, which obviously is the great meeting of minds.
I feel like I know what's coming now.
Yeah, well, actually, maybe not. If you've noticed anything, do bring it to the table in this portion. But I saw, like, don't rub your hands, please. I will put on some fucking gloves. Like, no. But anyway, like, every day Vince stepped up to the plate to do some casting, there was, like, some mad thread about Vince. It was like
I was going to bring up, yeah.
Right. Well, he was, like, one of the most scrutinized.
What I loved, Rich. From day one, it went from like, oh, Henry's talking too much and he's not letting Vince get in. Oh, Vince, is he really cut out for the top? Next day, Vince is one of the best casters of all time. Fucking hell.
I know.
In one day, like, as though he's actually like read all the Reddit threads. He's just been up all night reading it. Oh, what does that change? And then he's just come out like fucking, just turned it on, like the ugly duckling. He's just turned it all around. Oh, it was a swan all along or whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. So that is the thing. I don't know why people were acting surprised that, first of all, it would be a little bit janky on day one, right? Henry and Sadakist have been a partnership for how many years? Is it 2 years now?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, must be about 2 years. Now I don't like partnerships commentary partnerships per se in esports. I always think they're a little bit limiting and not necessarily a good career move. And if for any reason the partnership ever sort of breaks apart, it's like what happens when that famous band breaks up and you go and do your side projects. No one really gives a fuck because it was about, for a lot of people, it's about the chemistry you create as a duo, right? I think we saw that to like a lesser extent with Tastosis. You know, Tasteless and Artosis is the big esports duo. It was the thing that kind of set that as a standard because everybody enjoyed listening to them. By themselves, not so much, you know? Like, do you want to watch Tasteless fucking play Battletoads? Do you want to listen to Artosis rabbit on about Hearthstone? No, but when they're together, magic happens. So I thought it was
imagine if people one day actually find out how much fucking Tasteless was being paid to stream Battletoads for 2 hours a fucking month.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, I think
one day it'll get out there. I think the statute of limitations on that is surely lifted.
Oh, yeah, I'll just dig it out.
You can just call me a cunt again in my face if I bring it up.
Yeah, why not? I mean, like, well you remember about the time Artosis tried to start a fight with me? Remember that?
Did he try it as well? Okay. So, between the two of them, their duo, us trying to take on our duo, I reckon we go wrestling, mate, fucking tag team.
Pay-per-view up in this, mate.
I mean, one of them literally eats, like, fucking lettuce. So he's just eating water, basically. But just instead of having a drink, he likes to eat, chew it or something. And the other one, as I said, getting paid fucking Kanye money to stream Battletoads, a game that's not even beloved or anything. It's not like it's some, like, hot game. It's literally a game he was playing in his youth, and he just thought, play that again, shall I?
It was one of the most surreal things that ever happened to me. So okay. I think it was a DreamHack in Stockholm. So I don't think it was like one of the big ones.
Okay.
It wasn't like a Jan Sherping one. It was, you know, in a place that had like hotels and that kind of thing. And we were in the lobby after the event, and it was sort of, I hadn't seen them since all of that StarCraft documentary nonsense.
Sons of StarCraft.
Yeah, the Sons of StarCraft nonsense had gone down. And it was like an after party. I was chilling with like Robert Olin, a few other people. And I like went up all to sort of, yeah, I know. I do miss that motherfucker. He hates me now compared me to Mussolini.
If you notice, Rich, that is another symptom of the fucking post-Trump world we live in. Is that like even just people you knew who were just people before are now like mortal enemies where someone's going to die by the end. Well, yeah, all of us technically, but I mean, some sooner than others.
Someone's going first, yeah. So I was like going up to get a drink or whatever, and Artosis like came over to me and started like jabbing me in the chest to his finger. Hell. Like straight into the finger. And I was like, you're all right, mate. You're all right, Dan. And he was like saying, I hate the way you make a living. That's what he said to me. I hate the way you make
I should make like a video, right? And it should be like when you get on the plane and you see the safety demonstration. And it's just like, so you've become a professional caster/player/ esports journalist, and you go into your first LAN. If you see Richard Lewis, do not do these things. I'd probably start with a few of those. Just immediately handsy. Then just start in sentences like, I hate you, and you're... Looks at his notepad. Unprofessional.
Yeah, I know.
Because why is he doing that?
Because I knew, right? Because first of all, he was clearly inebriated. And second of all, unlike the Lotus situation, I know Dan isn't going to fucking...
Yeah, sure.
He's not going to switch it up and go into a fucking rear naked choke, is he? Like, I don't know. So I wasn't worried, but I did tell him in no uncertain terms, as you've seen me tell other people, don't touch me again or this situation is going to escalate. Not a big fan of unwanted physical contact and not the kind of bitch that's going to fucking tolerate it. So stop. I basically told him that. And he was like giving me some mad fucking lecture about how by presenting the truth about the documentary, I somehow tarnished their brand. And he was like going, I've got a family to feed, like really laying it on unbelievably thick. And sure. He was being hyper aggressive. But what I remember was really surreal about the whole situation was fans were coming over, and nobody knew who the fuck I was back then. So fans were coming over going, oh, Artosis, I love you. Can I get a picture? And he would break away from this like mad, hyper-aggressive conversation. And like Valley of the Dolls, he'd turn around and he'd have this fake smile on his face like, oh, hey, how you doing? And then he would like pose for a fucking selfie like that. The fan would go away going, oh my God, I just met Artosis. And then he'd come back to me, now back to why you're a cunt. And he'd start and like, fucking hell, you are mental. So, yeah, you know, they're all fucking wackadoo. I don't know why people, it's what I mean. The one thing I'll say about you and me is at least all our shit's out there in public. Like we just,
I've always said this, our skeletons aren't in the closet, mate.
Yeah.
That's what's hilarious. That's why if you notice when people come at us now, it's not just that, like obviously the mainstream ones, yeah, they are lazy and they don't know anything about esports. Fair enough. They haven't done the research, but there's nothing for people to do research on. Like there's no big like reveal that they're going to come out with about you or me. That's going to change how everyone thinks. That's why they have to go immediately to like lies basically. Meanwhile, the thing I've never understood about esports, Rich, maybe give me your thoughts on this. Cause I've always wondered about it, right? It's the people who know you have got the dirt on them who will push you the most.
Basically
challenge you. It's almost like they have a death wish.
They
this thing that you, I mean, I've had some of them recently where it's like they're begging you to reveal, you know, something you have in a log or something you knew recently or something that you were there for that they did years back. And they'll just keep pushing. I've never understood it. It's such a weird phenomenon.
Yeah, in esports, it's almost like, for me, it's like, I don't know, the ultimate fucking power play. It's like, you know, you're at a party and you've took two dates, you know, and you're trying to juggle them all night. Like, ooh, the sexual titillation and thrill. It's like some mad fucking, it is probably some form of perversion, which wouldn't surprise me in esports at all. But yeah, people have done it to me all the time. It's like, how did I make a name for myself? Investigative journalism. You have skeletons in the closet that could be, ooh, I don't know, investigated. Why? Yeah. Why the fuck would you step to me over something really inane and innocuous? Why would you do it? But they, yeah. it's happened to me loads. And then when you go fucking nuclear and you dig up the stuff and you go, oh, do you remember when you did that thing with a thing? And here's the proof of the thing that you did. They always go, fucking hell, you didn't have to go straight to, you know, yeah. DEFCON 5 or whatever. Like, of course I did. You were coming at me. What the fuck are you talking about?
My favorite as well is there'll always be people on Twitter and Reddit who don't know any of the context. And so their first assumption is like, oh, why are you doing that? That's really unfair. And you're like, well, no, I was replying to him, like, you know, saying that I'm like a piece of shit and a racist and not even actually do my own job. And then they're like, no, you weren't. You just replied to him over something else. Like, brilliant. I'm out. See ya.
So the reason we're talking about them, obviously, is talking about Vince. So, first of all, Vince and Henry not being a partnership, the idea that they were just going to somehow immediately click, especially when Vince is like a very different fucking style to Sadakist, you know, certainly more play-by-play oriented, a lot drier, doesn't necessarily go for the wordplay, more about like emotions and build-up and having lulls and then explosive, you know, verbiation of what's happening on the screen. It reminds me a lot of, and I was going to do a separate video on this because I wanted to sort of talk about the golden generation of talent we've had in Counter-Strike because it's actually ridiculous. Everybody jerking off about all the, like, oh, look at all the greats we had in StarCraft. We've had about three times as many phenomenally talented people come through the Counter-Strike ranks, all of which have proven they can hang on fucking American television and build brands and all of this stuff. And Vince is definitely part of that generation, but he reminds me a lot of Sid Waddell. I don't know if you ever know him. He's like the Northeast. He was the voice of darts for years.
Oh, right, yes.
Now, this is all you need to know. First of all, darts is fucking stupid. It's two fat cunts throwing drunk, like most of the time, throwing spiky bits of metal at cork. And somehow I've got to make that exciting.
And it's straight fire to watch, though.
Oh, yeah. But mainly because of people like Sid Waddell. Like, what he would always do is he would always tell mad stories. He would always do these insane metaphors, build it up. And then, of course, in a very, you know, northeastern accent, where if someone is, he's got the double top, like, you know, you go fucking absolutely wild and fucking, you know, it was a big part of it. And I think Vince is a lot like that. But anyway, yeah, day one, everyone's saying, oh, why haven't they clicked perfectly? It's the first time they've, like, worked together in years. Stupid point. But then it's almost as if people have forgotten how good Vince actually is, because obviously we haven't seen him at a lot of, you know, tier one events for a variety of reasons. First the bereavement, then he had some health problems. He's not a big fan of travel anyway, you know, which definitely limits you in the freelance. just
pick the right job, honey.
Yeah, I don't like travel. Do you want to work in this industry that requires you to be on the road for 300 days a year? No. So anyway, but yeah, so there's been a few issues, but like he got back into a tier one event finally, and he's proven he's a tier one caster. I just don't understand why anybody in the community was surprised at how good he was. Like, it just blew my mind. That was like, it needed like 50 threads. And it was like, you could see the penny dropping in each thread. It was like, oh, Henry and Vince are bad. And then it would be like a few comments like, oh, just give them time. Then tomorrow, wow, Vince has really stepped up his end of the event. Vince for president of the universe. And it's like, yeah, guys, he's good. There's everybody, if you work in that kind of event, you're good. End of fucking story. So I just thought it was really weird that people fucking felt the need to kind of like scrutinize him so much. Especially imagine the pressure he's under. Like, you know, oh, yep, just every time I open my mouth, 60 fucking Reddit threads assessing it. Like, just let him do his fucking job, you know what I mean? Judge him at the end, maybe. And, of course, he got to do the final as well, which was good.
That was actually a bit weird. I mean, I don't know if they had some sort of deal with Sadakist and Henry before, because obviously they are the main duo that do finals nowadays. But I was surprised that they didn't, in light of the circumstances, swap it up and have Anders and Moses do it. But who knows? I do know that that's actually a topic which is, maybe people don't know this publicly, so I'll say it, which has actually changed a lot recently, which is that, yes, in the past, the entire goal as a caster was, I want to be the one who does the final. That was a big, big deal. Now, for majors, I'm almost certain that probably is still the case, because that is still the big match that, you know, everyone tunes in for. People who don't even watch Counter-Strike watch it. But I have to say, for other events, since we have so many events in the calendar, I know there's a lot of casters out there now who have switched up, and some of them would rather do semi-finals now, because you never know actually whether your final's going to be good. Obviously, the pressure sometimes makes it a worst game, whereas actually, if you look, semi-finals tend to be amazing. They nearly always deliver, because somehow the fact it's not quite the final means that people don't get too nervous, and you just tend to get teams play their best and you get a great match. So I know in the current climate, like when you have two groups like this, they tend to do it where it's like sometimes they actually give you both semi-finals if the other duo gets the final, or something akin to that, depending on what the schedule is. So I can see why people don't mind switching up. It is a bit stupid anyway, scrutinizing Vince that much, bearing in mind everyone you're going to compare him to works in a duo, as in they've literally had months to get their timing down, to know who does what, to do what. Like, even when you look, for example, okay, at like Panzi and Moses, when they sometimes do a game, I think they must have done about 50 games now, at least, together. Even they have done like a mini duo almost at some of the events where obviously Moses used to be an analyst. So, yeah, I actually think, if anything, the sad state for Vince is, I think he would have been like already tier one and would be in that status if, A, we didn't have duos. Because actually, one thing, it's funny, he obviously gets like the budget Anders because he looks like him, but actually his skill set's quite similar as well. Like, the thing I always said Anders was the best at was, in the days before duos, he used to be the ultimate like catalyst person. If you throw him in with anyone, it'll make it work. You know, he'll do his part, but in a slightly different way, and it'll be a great cast. I think Vince has got the same quality, just obviously, when you've got three duos out there, it's going to be hard-pressed to get work. And then on top of that, he hasn't obviously put himself in the ideal position with the inability to travel sometimes. So I feel like he's one of the rare examples I've ever seen of someone who actually should be tier one, but isn't, due to reasons that have nothing to do with normal industry politics. The only other person I can think of is, as an analyst, I'm actually quite sure that by now Launders would be tier one. It's just that he's got his own, I think, some sort of like reason he can't travel, or maybe for business he didn't want to. So he had some reason, I can't remember what it was. And he also didn't actually accept a lot of times where, you know, people would ask me, do you have someone to recommend for this event? And I would always say these people, but they were never available for the event. So it's actually a bizarre state of affairs in that sense. Cause I'm used to people coming from the opposite, where it's like, you'll take any gig to try and break through, you know.
Maybe that's the next big duo, Vince and Launders.
Wouldn't be bad.
I think it could
dry,
work.
Can't lie, a little bit dry.
I don't know, because I think there's something there, me. The one other good thing that came out of Marseille from a casting perspective was the popularization of Moses' nickname as Momo.
I've been called him that for a long time.
No, but I couldn't believe how many fucking times he got dropped on the broadcast. Like, Anders has been on them fucking edibles again, mate, because in the middle of in the middle of like a broadcast, he went, yeah, that's absolutely right, Momo. I was like, what? what is he doing? I'll tell you another story, since it's fine, and we're definitely going to talk about some Counter-Strike. We went out to the cinema when we were all out in Atlanta for E-League, right? And this is a while back. So we went to see that fucking shit X-Men Apocalypse movie.
All right.
Right? Now, without putting too fine a point, Nick, we never talk out of school, but Anders was wrecked, right? Anders got absolutely fucking wrecked. And we went to watch this fucking X-Men Apocalypse movie. Now, here's the thing some of you might not know, if you don't follow us regularly on the broadcast. One of the things I love about Counter-Strike is week to week, the events are different, but you see the evolution of in-jokes and banter. So if you follow every event, you get like an almost meta storyline that develops among the talent, you know, little in-jokes and stuff. But anyway, Moses does look like Professor X, right? He looks like Professor X, you know, Xavier, the one in the fucking wheelchair, the psychic.
I'll never forget the time where, along these lines, Rich, while I just remember it, when you do in-jokes, one of the problems you tend to have is you don't always remember that the audience might not know the genesis of this joke, so they might not get the joke. And I remember Moses himself actually messed this up. Do you remember on the E-League broadcast?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
We obviously used to joke, mainly privately, about Moses looking like Professor X and getting in Cerebro and doing that. Right? Because we did that joke one time, Moses, but in a context where we hadn't said it on this broadcast, when it came to doing like a segment where you had to break a round down, he just goes, right, guess I better get in that chair then.
Yeah,
like, no. Excuse me.
Yeah. That was wild as fuck, wasn't it? So anyway, if I remember rightly, I think Moses was there on a date or something, which makes it all the better, right?
I think he might even have said wheelchair. He might even have actually said it.
Yeah, no, I think he said, I've got to go get in my wheelchair on an E-League. No,
just unreasonable.
He said it, mate. I was like, fucking hell, Jason. So anyway.
Calm down, Momo.
I think Moses was on a date or something, right? So I was calling him Professor Sex, like just dropping it in there, right? Like trying to be funny. But then we were in this theater and it was dark and Anders was wrecked. And every time Patrick Stewart came on the fucking screen, all I could hear in the dark was Anders going, this like mad high-pitched laugh. We were just looking around because it was worse because we went to fucking Cine Bistro, so they put you in their massive chairs, right? So little Professor X was in this huge chair just like fucking Cerebro. Me and Anders were just buckled and all Moses was trying to do was get some tender loving in the dark, you know. So yeah, good times. I fucking love Momo. Right, let's talk about some Counter-Strike. DreamHack Marseille, good event. Actually, really enjoyed this one. Liked some of the little production things DreamHack were doing. Been a while since I've said anything good about DreamHack, you know, because they've been on a slightly downward spiral, but just little touches, music when they were doing the close-ups and whatnot. And there were a lot of storylines that sort of emerged from
before
this.
Before we go on, right, I will say I agree with you. I like all the DreamHack Masters events, actually. They've done a really good job. I do think they've done a very smart idea of like making sure that if they do a Masters event, they go all out with it. They haven't just slapped that tag on all the events, you know. They know that they have certain events that are a smaller tier, the open ones. And they try to make the winter a little bit bigger, but then Masters is the actual like premier tier event from them. So I will say everything I like else about the event, I like. They always get stacked tournament. I like the format. I agree, the production's all gotten better over the years. We remember the old days when it was more of like a skeleton crew running it. But I will say for this event, I have to say this, because this podcast is about being real, and no other fucker is going to say this to you. So, you know when they did those shots of the crowd? I saw that like Moses himself did a tweet like this, where he tweeted, you know, what the ESEA LAN looked like in 2015. And then he tweeted DreamHack Marseille and he was like, you know, like, oh, look where I've come from here. Right. Even with the patented Katowice fisheye lens, the size of that crowd wasn't crazy, mate. Come on.
No.
Like that looked, that was like a couple of thousand tops, you know, like.
Yeah, it was 2,500 was the official.
That didn't look that crazy, mate. Like that's why I thought it was a bit cringe. I will say, even though I love Stunnies, my boy, that was fucking cringe when he was trying to play up that crowd. Like, come on, mate. Like, you know, that bit where he was going like. Like some shit villain out of an Indiana Jones movie or something who's about to cut a motherfucker's head off or something.
Kalima! Kalima!
Like, that was mad. That was mad cringe. That's why I did that tweet right at the moment when he started doing that, where I just said, DreamHack BitConnect looks fucking lit.
Yeah, I thought that, mate. Yeah. No, but like,
the rest of it was sick, though. You know.
Listen, I'll say this about Stunno. He's a good fucking sport, right? Because they do make him do all this, like, but one of the most low-rent things you can do on a broadcast, for me anyway, is send the interviewer into the crowd to interview the fans. I have never thought that adds much. Like, if they've got a cool story and it's something you can build in, sure, do that, you know. I always feel sorry for the interviewers when they send them into the fucking crowd. I've seen them do that to Smix, like when DreamHack sent Smix to Moscow and she was like trying to talk to people in the crowd who didn't speak great English, and it's like, please stop doing this. But Stunner just fucking, he just gets in there, rolls up his sleeves and does it. And, you know, it is a bit cringe. It's not something I like to see a lot of. If I was ever handling a broadcast, it would be kept down to an absolute fucking minimum.
I have to say as well, there is an element of it, like real talk. Bearing in mind, the people who make these decisions aren't new to esports. Like, they aren't still enamored with all of this, you know, and really buy into it. They're, a lot of the people behind these companies are like grizzled veterans. They've been there from the beginning. It does come off a bit like smelling your own farts when you're constantly going on about the crowd. Oh, look at this crowd we've got here. Look at this kid. Look, who's your favorite player? Like, oh, come on, man. We get it. You've got a crowd. Now, I realise if you dream at Masters, that's a fucking big deal, so better celebrate it, aren't you? Never know them Vegas.
I just always hated it, though. It is like when you fucking see, you know, musicians or comedians, you know, it's great to be here at Joy Z. It's like, yeah, you're just trying to ingratiate yourself to a ravenous mob that could turn on you at any fucking moment.
You know, when they get like a good laugh and they just go, you guys are great. You guys are great. It's like, if you're not actually in that crowd, you're just like, fuck everyone in this crowd. Yeah. Well, just me, maybe. Might join my misanthropy just playing up again there.
So yeah, Stunner's a good spot. But anyway, it was a pretty stacked event. Some good storylines that sort of came out of it. We'll talk about the sort of more prominent ones. Now, I'm going to be doing Ocelot's podcast tomorrow. Ocelot, obviously, founder and owner of G2 Esports. Not a great event for them here. I mean, sure, I think they were in a pretty tough group, but after, you know, sort of so much was made about the ruthless nature of the cuts that they made and how this was going to be better for the organization, and we had to trust the process, and they would certainly kick on. It was a very flat event for them. And I think what's kind of worst of all is they lost to Envious, which that's what consigned them to being out of the tournament. Few people immediately tweeted at me going, ha ha, Hastro just owned you. He definitely didn't. He's still a two-faced, sleazy piece of shit, but, you know, whatever.
Also, Envious didn't get out of the group, so how has he owned anything? Yeah, he's owned is a retirement home for players that get paid more than some of the best players in the world. So, in many ways, every day he wakes up and looks in the mirror, self-ownage.
Nice.
I actually don't mind Hastro, so I'm probably going to have to walk these back a bit. My problem is I just get into the energy. I'm a hype man. That's my problem. It's always been my problem, Rich. I'm
you are the Drew Bundini Brown, so no problem there. But fucking, I'm there, mate. But I just thought, like, you know, that has got to go down as like a super embarrassing result. Especially when you saw how Envious got absolutely destroyed by FaZe in the same group. Now, sure, the Cloud9 game was close. They lost in overtime.
They were actually up 15-12 on that one as well. Like, they basically, that was like the killer. And then obviously you can't lose to Envious. That's like, in the context of trying the new lineup, that is the ultimate iniquity, isn't it? Especially since, as you say, it's not like Envious then shows an amazing tournament. You're like, oh, well, maybe we misjudged this. Nope, Envious still garbage.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I just wanted, you know, what you kind of made of all of this, and whether you've got any thoughts about the ongoing problems that G2 seem to be having. Because, you know, when I put this event down, so in my mind, and I'll say this just full disclosure, because I never hide my predictions, be they right or wrong. I never try, for example, say to have one set of predictions on a broadcast and one set of predictions on a Twitter. I owe my shit, Duncan. Just saying. So I had Mouse Sports winning the whole thing, and I had G2 as sort of like the dark horse, home soil. You know, I could have saw them maybe sneaking into the finals, semi-finals, to sort of go out 30th to 16th, where you're on a par with Valiants and Space Soldiers. I mean, you have finished in the bottom tier of all the teams that were there. So I just wanted your thoughts about what the fuck's going on.
Well, I mean, first of all, if you watch these, obviously they only played two maps. So we didn't have a massive sample size, I will say, but their T side wasn't very good. And that obviously is immediately a problem when NBK has taken over as in-game leader. He said he's putting in this whole system. Like, the whole thing of, if you've looked at all the interviews with NBK, is he hasn't done what a Carrigan would do if he came into a team, which is come in and be like, right, what change can I make today that would make us slightly better? And we could maybe like grind a quick win out, and then, you know, I'll go piece by piece. He's actually trying to do this where, because he's been given whatever it is, a few months or something, you know, he's coming in and he's trying to give it a full on go. It's not like the little past times when he did it for a week. So fair play to him. And as I say, he almost did win that Cloud9 game. So it wasn't that terrible. But generally for the two maps, T-side wasn't very good. They didn't actually look like they had insane firepower. I mean, I'm with you. I had them getting out of this group. I thought it would be Cloud9 that would shit the bed. I thought it would be FaZe and G2. And like, I don't think G2 were going to win the tournament. But I agree. I also thought if they get to the playoffs, this is a team with some talent. They've got some really versatile players in some of them. This could do a lot. So it was very underwhelming, I have to say, especially in terms of players. Like, for example, Mixwell wasn't good in this tournament, quite frankly. And I actually hoped, for me, he was one of the big question marks coming into the team, because obviously MBK is the lead, is the first thing you look at. But then beyond that, you bring in a Mixwell, this all-around talent, someone who actually, famously, if you go and watch his games, seems to be very, very good at playing off other people, actually. Is like, whenever I watched his POV demos when I was doing a video about Optic, I noticed he was really good at, like, seemingly reacting to what people's comms were, and so it made it look like he had a wall hack on. Like, he always knew where the CT, where the enemy was, basically. Yeah, so I thought, right, this is great. If I'm MBK, I'm going to love having a guy like that, and I'm going to love having a team where, okay, we've lost Shoxy, so let's go the other way. Let's go to a team of approach. It's not going to be about star players, and they just lack firepower, lack a T-side. So this was about the worst start to an event you could have, I think, for this new squad.
Yeah, and there was
I haven't given up on them entirely, though, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so either. Like, Mixwell's still the big question mark for me. A lot of people have been messaging me, like, saying, oh, you know, they got to cut body or whatever. I don't know if I subscribe to that. Like, Mixwell was always one of those players where I kind of felt he's very much like jack of all trades, master of none. And I just feel that when you've got a team that has, like, NBK body in there, they definitely needed to go for a bigger star name, someone with a bit more firepower, someone that can post big numbers and be a bit more robust. And I'm pretty sure this isn't a long-term thing. Like, knowing Ocelot and everything, I'm pretty sure they're going to try Mixwell for, like, you know, 2-3 maybe events, and then they're going to maybe, you know, make another decision and try and get another French player in, perhaps, or somebody else that they feel is going to be compatible. I think it's Mixwell that's on the on borrowed time and has to step up and prove himself. And sure, it's only two maps. It's two best of ones. But honestly, you've got to prove yourself. Like, Kenny S was solid. He's in good form right now. He's the star. Apex is in good form right now. These are like your win conditions. All you really need is just one other player to be able to kind of step up, and situationally, should one of those people fall early in a round, you know, get a refrag or just be able to make up a little bit of the weight. It's not Body and MBK's remit to do that, honestly. So very, very strange to see them struggle this much, especially on home soil. I thought they would be buoyed a little bit by the crowd. And Kiyoshima actually said that, you know, oh, when the favorite is always going to be under more pressure, you know, for the when the two French teams meet, the right favorite's always going to be under more pressure. And he's certainly correct there. It's not like any form of great insight, but they absolutely capitulated against Envious. That game was very one-sided and very embarrassing. So, yeah, I don't really know if G2 are the complete package right now. For me, I think they still need to make a roster change. I don't know what it would be, but I don't think Mixwell's going to go the distance. I don't think he's the panacea for what ails
them. The downside for me is that, unfortunately, their first LAN ended up being one where if you go out in last place, you lost two best of ones. Like, I would have loved to see this team at Star Series, Katowice. You know, these events where you might play, like, four best of threes, minimum two or three, you know. That's where I would have liked to see them start, because then I'd have more of a sense of where they're at, you know. I mean, I only saw them play Cash and Mirage. That was it. So I can't even really gauge what their map pool should be. Where, like, if I'd at least got six maps out of them, I'd have a better sense if it really is Mixwell doesn't fit, you know. So that's why I say I can't really write them off after this one. It's about the minimum sample size you could get. And yes, the Envious one, that's unacceptable. But the Cloud9 one, that's not really terrible to lose to Cloud9. Yeah. Cloud9 themselves a new lineup, but they were decent enough.
Yeah, and what's interesting is there's a little bit of drama coming out sort of in this aftermath of the Shocks, you know, leaving. Like, I saw MBK doing a few interviews and talking about, you know, in-game leadership duties and this kind of thing. And I know enough about MBK to know that I feel there was like some passive aggressive barbs in there, because he was talking about work ethic and in-game leaders. And the way I interpreted that was kind of saying, almost implying very subtly, that when Shocks was in-game leader, that isn't what was happening. You know, that's how I interpreted it. Maybe I'm reading way more into it than it actually is. But I think Shux kind of felt that as well, maybe, because he came out on Twitter and said, I just listened to the interview from NBK on Vacom. It's a pity. I thought we agreed when we left. Obviously, we did not live the same year. We did not have the same problems, and we were not on the same team. I did not extend on the subject because there have already been enough dramas in the French scene, and I do not want to create one. It was just important for me to clarify, I do not agree with his words, but sorry, there will be no popcorn this time. Last info, it's very clear to me regarding motivation. I had these problems that were known to the big days when I was a player. Since I was captain, I never dropped, and I had never worked so much for CS. Sad that nobody on my team recognizes it. So Shox interpreted MBK's comments the same way I think I did, and the implication there was that he didn't work as hard as an in-game leader as he could have done. Shox completely refutes that. But I think what's interesting...
Hilarious coming from someone who's played under Happy for like 2.5 years. Fair enough. You know, horses for courses, I guess.
Yeah, but I think what's interesting is it shows this. I talked about this a lot. I did a video on it called G2 Super Team that could never work. The reality is Shox and MBK, they are the polar opposites of like philosophies, ideologies. They're both hugely successful. If they could ever work together, that is the key to creating a number one team in the world for France. But unfortunately, they can't. And you know, Shox has never had the confidence in NBK being the right kind of player. NBK's never had the confidence in Shox as sort of an in-game leader, or when he has to do anything except other than be an explosive fragger. And it's just one of those hostilities in the scene that it's just never going to go away, evidently. Like, I thought they buried the hatchet, but clearly not.
That's why, to me, the key... The reason why, when they first did that French split, the first French shuffle, where MBK went and joined Shox in LDLC, that people don't understand. Like, maybe I should do some content on this. That was such a natural disaster level impact to the French scene, because NBK and Existence were like completely aligned, like philosophy, how you play the game. Obviously in Source they were massively successful, so how you win championships, how a team should be run. So when he left and went over and played with Shox and Happy and these guys, what's funny is I never at the time thought, wow, he must really believe in Shox. What I thought was, wow, he really doesn't believe in Existence anymore, and he's probably never going to play with this guy again, because basically in leaving, what he's saying is, oh, you are one of the only other people in this entire scene who has a similar mentality to me on how to run a team properly, what good work ethic is, practice, what a professional does. But I'm so sick of playing with you specifically. I'll go play with anyone. I'll go play with the guy who's famously not motivated and who just like plays sometimes, doesn't play sometimes. He's in a professional team the whole time. So to me, him going to Shox and going to Happy and playing with these guys, and you notice only coming back when Shox had single-handedly took G2 back to better than Envious, and Envious was in the complete shitter. That's the extreme scenario it took. But with that said, that is one thing I actually love about the French scene, is that in the end, the reason why it feels like eventually you do get all the lineups you want is because while they are incredibly political and they're incredibly stubborn and it's so tough to change their mind, one thing I respect about the big like movers and shakers in the French scene is that when things do go so badly and you've tried everything, they understand that all that is left to try is the one move you had previously refused to make, which might be Kenny S and Shox team up. It might be Shox going back to Existence after all these years and saying, you know what, there's no one else in the scene who can do this role, so I'll play with you even if it means losing my spot on the team. Like, that's one thing I can respect about all of these guys, actually, is that even if they might be a bit slow to make that decision, they do make it eventually. Whereas, you know, there's other scenes, I mean, obvious ones being like the Swedish scene, where you just never get like NiP players paired up with Olaf Meister or what, you know, whatever move you wanted to see over there. Some of these moves just never happen.
The other team that sort of underperformed for me was Team Liquid. But I suppose there's a context to it that's important to recognize. Obviously, they won their best of one against Gambit. Then they did lose 2-1 to Astralis, which obviously they went on to win the whole tournament. Yep. And then they lost a rematch to Gambit in a best of three, which is where I would say they probably fell down a little bit. There was a lot of talk about a resurgent Gambit coming out of this tournament, which we'll get into.
Garbage, mate. But
yeah, I didn't think they were like, all
this
that.
This was honestly more Team Liquid shit in the bed to me than Gambit being amazing, you know.
Sadly. Yeah, and you can see there was still a few kinks dying out. It was a pretty close series overall. What surprised me was that when Liquid beat Gambit on Overpass and then they go into Mirage, that's got 2-0 written all over it for me.
Yes.
Like, Liquid on Mirage, it's such a good map for them. Yeah. So I was like, and it was their pick in this series. So I was like, oh, well, this is, you know, Liquid are looking very good here, you know, adding Overpass into the mix. They got Mirage coming up. Train was a decider, so I was still confident they could sneak through. That was 16-14. So obviously that's a coin toss. You know, we're in this current meta right now where pistols are just so fucking stupid because of the CZ that honestly, if you lose a map by a couple of rounds here or there, if you have that 16-14 or you lose in overtime, you can't really say you play particularly poorly because the CZ factor is just so stupid right now. That's something else I could rant and rave about all night. But yeah, this was a bit of a stumble. And I don't really know sort of how to make an assessment about this. But I think what's interesting is I've been watching Liquid since Taco came in and watching how they've been playing. And it does seem that Nitro's kind of taken a few sort of backward steps. I don't know. I'm not quite sure why that's happened. But his level of performance overall, this tournament certainly wasn't where Nitro was, you know, 3 months ago when we were talking about Nitro emerging as one of the great talents in NA. You know, right up there, you've got Allege, Twist, Nitro, NAF. Like, Liquid should be a team that are really just going out and blowing teams away, especially Gambit, who are having an identity crisis right now, lacking clarity in in-game leadership, tactics, map pool, everything. And Hobbit didn't even have a particularly great time of it at this tournament. And he, for me, is their best, you know, player on the roster. So really weird. It was just a strange Liquid performance. I don't know if I want to castigate them too much, though, because ultimately it did come down to like a couple of rounds on Train. But I don't know what you made of it, because I know you've had high hopes for this Liquid lineup.
Well, the thing that I found so disappointing was the fact that all three maps in this series are supposed to be good maps for this team. These are supposed to be maps that are right up their alley. They can play them all. In fact, they're all maps as well, which traditionally Taco is really good on. Like, actually, he was a great piece for the teams he played for in the past on these maps. I was hoping, like I actually said this in my video on Team Liquid, it's one of the rare moves I've ever seen where on paper it is just a straight upgrade in all the ways you'd want, while not really seemingly risking any of the things that you've sort of already got. Like, you're not giving up one thing to get this upgrade elsewhere. So when I looked at Team Liquid, I was like, right, this is already a team that, for my money, is like a player or something, a level off being a championship team. Like, they've got all the parts, but there's just something they're missing. So I thought to myself, if Taco comes, if, like, let's say he can just shore up one of the maps, maybe he can bring a little bit of veteran clutchness. He can be a bit of a facilitator. So you get the 1% extra out of a Twist, out of a NAF. That, to me, has written all over it. This could be the team of Liquid that actually does go for the number one spot. And then you watch this tournament. As you say, okay, yeah, first tournament with a new lineup. Yes, very stacked tournament. But beating Gambit in the best of three, that should be doable. I mean, I'll say on the other side of the equation, they were the only team to take a map from Astralis, so fair play. That deserves its own plaudits after seeing how insane Astralis was by the end of the tournament. But yeah, I found it a bit underwhelming because I thought, like, for this Team Liquid squad, I think it should be top four or bust at these tournaments, like especially right now. This is why it's so exciting, as we're going to get to later when we talk about Astralis, because the scene is so wide open now that if you are a solid team with a good lineup of players, good map pool, and you've got your head on your shoulders, it's open for you. The world's your oyster right now, because there's all these teams right now that are so far from where you are. Cloud9, SK Gaming, you know, these are squads that are in tough spots. Gambit's another one. Gambit, for me, is a team that capped out a while back. And for me, I've only been going downhill. Like, you look at this tournament. I've already mentioned in the past when he was actually made in-game leader. Hobbit is it's just depressing. You've taken one of the best young stars we had in this game, and he's just lost some of that magic. Like, fair play, Adren's back on, like, impact levels of being really good. But this is a team where I don't know how they ever get anywhere as a squad, Gambit, for my money. I mean, I know people are going to look at this tournament and go, what are you on about? Like, the placing was really good. Sure. But if you just look at the level of play, like, you watch them round to round, I don't feel like they're that good a team, to be honest.
No, I don't think so either. We'll get into Gambit, I guess, a little bit later on. Let's talk about SK Gaming. This is one of the stories of the tournament for me. Like, it's over. It's actually fucking over. Like,
by the way, all those SK fans out there who were constantly messaging me for months, FaZe lost again. Y'all don't even know what winning's like in 2018, boy.
Yeah, no, it's fucking true.
You'd love to be in some semifinals.
Yeah. I can't remember an SK Gaming this poor.
Nothing comparable. I actually looked it up. The last three tournaments, they did, their results were something like 9th to 12th, like 17th to 22nd. And then I think here, what would it be? Probably 9th again, right? Or last place, one of them.
Yeah, it was...
ninth again. Yeah, ninth, so they haven't even had, like... Oh, no, they might have made playoffs once. They made playoffs at Star Series. So I think they had, like, three tournaments without a top eight. One of them, WESG, by the way. And then they had a top eight at Star Series where they got instantly reamed out by Team Liquid. So this is the worst we've ever seen, especially because, remember, they're not changing half the team. They're changing one player at a time. So that whole thing of, like, you know, people love that term, the core. They've still got Fallen, Cold Zero, and Fur. That should be your core. This is bang out of order, these results.
Yeah. Well, look, let's say, like, first of all, full disclosure, because I'm keeping it fucking real. There is a little bit of kind of, I don't know, I kind of feel amused by it all. Like, after all the big song and dance they made about, oh, majors don't mean that much.
And, oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. This is karma. Yeah. This has come up in sort of level I want to
I have never believed in karma as a concept, but this is pretty fucking delicious. Like, this is a nice big slice of karma. The majors don't matter to us. We're going to fucking nail it with this lineup.
We're going to win WESG. We're focused on that one. It's got more money.
Yeah, it's got more money.
How much did you get for 17th plus again, Cold Zero? Get back at me, homie.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm doing my own reverb.
No, why not, man? Go for it. That toffee apple juice is working. It's fucking magic, man. So, no, I mean, and let's be real. The player that you have put on this fucking pedestal and held up, it was absolutely garbage this event.
It was really bad this event, man. Right. By the way, think about this for a second.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the whole thing I always told you that I always wondered about with Cold Zero, is if people, like, it has to go one way or the other. Either all the hype around Taco is bullshit and he never was helping Cold Zero and he never was facilitating him and he was just a normal support player who happened to get overrated because he won a lot of trophies, or there's some truth to it and he was helping Cold Zero, in which case, how will Cold Zero adapt in a world without Taco? Well, we found it's not looking fucking good so far. So the next tournament better be a switch up. Otherwise, that narrative will get in top. Like, that will become the headline real fast if Cold Zero is not going to be one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, for all the stock they put in a Bolts, like, he started out really good. Something is wrong in the team right now. And I know they've just brought Stewie in. We'll come to that in a second. Because I said I didn't think that could work. And so far, all evidence is pointing towards that being the case. But Bolts was absolutely awful. I mean, there is. Put it this way, in that series against Mousesports, which they took 16 rounds in two maps. SK Gaming, they got pretty much blown out on both of them. Maps that were very much in their wheelhouse. You know, like, they lost on Cash, for example. We all know SK Gaming are vibing on that right now. Bolts had 15 kills. It is bonkers, like, how poor he was. And when you consider that, everyone's going, oh, Mousesports have got that dead weight of Sticko and all this, and then you look at SK Gaming, this embarrassment of riches. This move has done nothing for Bolter's stock at all. Like, it's actually fucking harming his career every moment he's playing in this lineup, because they're either not using him right, or he has had a cataclysmic drop-off in form. I don't know if he's trying to pick up, especially now Stewie's there, if he's trying to pick up the Taco roles. Bolts definitely cannot do that. It's evident. And I'm telling you, we all know how fucking Fallen operates. Called to the fucking bone, he will just cut you after building you up to be the fucking solution for SK Gaming. He will just cut you, kick you to the curb, and you'll be playing for fucking ! Wondering where your fucking career went. So I don't know what needs to happen here, but SK Gaming were terrible. They've looked terrible for a while. And honestly, we'll get to the Stewie issue. I'm going to say it, right? I think Stewie's one of the most talented players, one of the greatest all-rounders NA's ever produced in the CSGO era. No doubt about it, for my mind. Does a bit of everything. Every time he's been given responsibility, he's handled it well. Been an in-game leader, what, you know, entry fragger, whatever the team needs, Stewie has adapted and been able to do it. Stewie thought this move was going to be fucking amazing because, oh, I get to work with Fallen, I get to play with Cold Zera, I get to play with Ferb. Yeah, there's a guy called Bolts in the team as well, brilliant. But I understand it from a young player's perspective. But I'm going to tell you, this move was desperation. They missed out on the simple and flamey move that they wanted. They felt they had to get something in, some star power, maybe even some marketability, because remember, these guys are going to be the Immortals. It's all happening. They're going to want that big media push, and we all know Noah Winston's a smart cat, so he's going to want to use you all in that capacity, having an NA player, not a bad call, but they just went out and got whatever talent was available. Stewie 2K was a panic buy.
Yep.
If it was any other sport, you would have called it a panic. Transfer windows closing, fucking hell. My £15 million star striker's fallen through. I better buy somebody else or the fans are going to turn on me. They went out and got Stewie. They didn't have a plan to implement him into the team. And it's showing consistently ever since they've got him. So now you've got this problem where if Bolts was the solution, now he is the issue, and you've got to get rid of him to accommodate Stewie. But Stewie probably should never have been there in the first place. It is mad. SK Gaming have absolutely fucked themselves ahead of this big Immortals move, and they've got a lot of problems they got to fix, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, like I said on Twitter, actually, the sick thing is, if you think about it, this would have been the first LAN with Simple and Flamey. I think this would have actually been it. So, like, I actually feel for SK in a sense, which is, as we saw from some of the reports, they did go all out. Like, fair play to Fallen. He knew his team was in dire straits. So he was like, you know what, why don't we just get the best player maybe Counter-Strike's ever seen and try working with him if we have to do a quick move now. Obviously, it didn't work. He couldn't get all the other players he asked for. I do think that's where he fucked up, though. This is the mistake I think Fallen made. Is because, as you're saying, the expectation from fans was, we're going to get a superstar. He didn't realize that there were no superstars available. He couldn't get Simple, he couldn't get Nico, couldn't get Rain, he couldn't get any Shocks, any of these players. So at that point in time, his mistake was doing as like what you're saying, which is like, well, who's sort of the next best person available? Yeah. That's the mistake. Because at that point in time, Stewie 2K isn't a Simple who's going to just, you know, single-handedly come in the lineup.
No turn one's it all around. Simple in 2018.
No one is. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to have anywhere near that impact. So at that point in time, if I was him, I'd have just swallowed it and said, right, we just have to get someone who can play some sort of role we need. Like, we need someone who can either replace Taco, or we need someone who can do something else, and we rejig the whole team. Because at the moment, they're just a mess. As you say, part of the problem with this team is, I mean, Stewie hasn't played well, Cold Zero hasn't played well, and then on top of it, now the guy feeling all the pressure is Bolts, and he's just shitting the bed completely. So I have to say, from looking at his career, I always felt like this is a reason why I never thought Bolts would get back into SK. Because even when Immortals was good, he always seemed like one of those players where he like mirrors the rest of the confidence level of the team. And so when Immortals would crumble and fall apart, he always looked like one of the guys who was just broken completely. So you can't have someone like that with all the pressure on his shoulders. Because as we all know, every little rat in the world is going to be like, no, actually, Cold Zero was fine. You know, he had 18 kills in this one game. Yeah, but he's Cold Zero, mate. And you see how he is set up in the game. You can't judge the kills uniformly like that. Relative to their job, Cold Zero is shitting the bed as hard as Bolts is in their jobs. Like, that's just the way it is. Cold Zero is supposed to, remember, people used to brag about this guy, rightly. Even if SK did a bad tournament, like top eight, he would still be like MVP numbers, you know, potentially best player in the world. That's gone away. So I have to say, whenever a team does a streak that's bad, like they had before the Stewie move, I always say this, it can't be one player. One player wouldn't make the whole team that bad. Usually that means either it's like two players or even worse. And this is something I think applies to G2. It's not even two players. The whole style has to be redone. You have to take the whole thing apart. And even if you get to keep three players, let's say, you've got to rework the whole thing, you know. Probably change the in-game leadership style, maybe change the star player, change up the maps you play. You've got to start from square one. So the problem with SK is they're just a bunch. They're just we would say, like, in English, like a much of nothing. It's just, I don't know what bright spots there are for this squad right now.
No,
I can't see any.
Yeah, it's really weird, the situation they've got themselves into. And, you know, I don't know how they get out of it now, because it seems as well, you know, they've made some very clear intimations to the rest of the Brazilian scene. We're ready to go international. We don't feel there's anyone out there who's available that could come in and do a job. You know, they made it very clear it wasn't going to be Henny and Lucas. Made it very clear. So for whatever, you know, and maybe in retrospect, that might have been the better fit. Might have been the way to go. Like, I look at Lucas and what he does on the server. One of the most unsung heroes in World Counter-Strike, honestly. He is the ultimate fucking dog's body in terms of what he does.
He would have been a good pickup. I agree. Yeah. If you're going to do a move where you're trying to just instantly, like, plug a hole and go back, like, retain some of what SK had before, I would have said Lucas is the pick to go with. But for whatever reason, he is inseparable. I mean, I guess that guy was born, like, a second after him or something, so fair play.
Yeah, they've got that twin telepathy shit going on, like, something out of Total Recall. He is fucking Quatto to fucking, well, whatever. I don't even know the other cunt's name.
No one does. Just the guy no who has knows. The guy inside him.
Yeah. Now you sound like KNG.
Well, you know, the other sad thing is this, I mean, people will think I'm just saying this to harp on it, but it's totally accurate. If there had been no social media incidents, I think KNG would have been the player you gamble on here. Firepower.
Oh, yeah.
Really ballsy player, would change the whole style of your team, brings up a bit of swagger. I would have said this would have actually been that idiot's chance if he hadn't have unfortunately put himself in a position where there's no chance of that happening, especially since they're going to Immortals in like a few months. Like,
yeah, come well, on. That's the thing. It would just be full circle. There would have been no point in kicking the fucker in the first place, would there? So yeah, SK Gaming have got all sorts of problems. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if they're going to do another international pickup. It really looks like Bolt is on borrowed time in this lineup. And even though I wrecked him contextually, I do feel sorry for him. This was his fucking dream move. And especially when you consider the absolute wreckage he had to climb out of with the whole Immortals bullshit and how those three selfish assholes fucked over the two professionals on the road. I do feel sorry for him. This should have been a golden time for him. He should have been winning trophies, and it looked like that was going to be how it was going to pan out. But 2018 has been savage.
Fuck all the SK fans who were like just bagging on Phelps 24/7 when they had their bad run. Right, first things first. Do you know what the bad run for SK was with Phelps? Still finishing top four, except one time ever. The only time they didn't was E-League Premier. That was it.
Yeah,
everything else, they were, you know, their bad result would be like three maps against Team Liquid, lost one narrowly, and people were like, you fucking suck. Because, like, understandably so, the expectation level for the team was the top. They were supposed to win everything, so I get that. But people went way too hard making it like it was all Phelps' problem, and as soon as he's gone, it'll be glorious. And obviously, unfortunately for them, they thought they'd gotten that when Bolts first came in because they won all those tournaments. Oh, we fixed it. It was all Phelps. Well, guess what? Phelps looks like a fucking killer when he's in any other team, mate. So I think one day you'll look back and go, what? We needed a sort of star player who could rework the team around. It was really skilled and Brazilian. Shit. Like, what?
Yeah.
Enjoy. You made your own bed, as my hero, Randy Harper, says. Get fucked in it.
No,
I don't know why I've invoked that name of all the obscure references to
not
me.
not bad. There was also all that weird shit about how, like, the players couldn't get on the same page about whether or not they wanted automatic. Like, Fallen was like, oh, we didn't.
That was hilarious. People didn't get this. Okay, Rich, I'll explain it now, because even though I do detest explaining jokes, because as that famous analogy goes, it's like dissecting a frog. You not only do you kill it, but it just doesn't work anymore. It's just dead, isn't it? So you can see how it works, but it's of no value to anyone, right? When I made this tweet where I said, like, can all the investigative journalists just take a moment to appreciate Fallen saying that SK was never interested in automatic, and he doesn't know where that's come from. But here's the key context you guys missed. Yeah. But it only came from Cloud9 players, including Stewie 2K. Do you see the genius of it? The genius of it is, because there's no investigative journalist involved in this story, Fallen inadvertently thinks he is calling out an investigative journalist. In reality, he has lived up to his name of Two-Face Toledo, because he's actually calling out himself and everyone else, because it really was happening. They all said it was happening. These are only credible sources. And he thinks naively, like, ha-ha, just wrecked some investigative journalist. No, my friend, you have not. The other face is you in the mirror. That could have been a bit right.
Do you want to try it?
That was crowbar. Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to go again? We can just
said, like, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is the most two-faced of them all?
No. Yeah, it was better the first time.
Sitnell, maybe DK. No, of course not. It was Fallen All Day.
Oh, there you go. All right. You pulled it out with a bit of poetry at the end. That's good. But yeah, but
he's done it obviously, right.
They obviously wanted fucking... I mean, Bolts is the guy who's going, isn't he? So it's like, imagine that for a confidence boost. Like, Fallen's like...
To be fair, maybe this is the problem. Because obviously, if you see Bolts, you can't really see it. You can't really tell if all the pressure's getting to him. I mean, you see him anyway, you're like, oh, fuck. Rough night sleeping. Yeah, got a lot on your mind? No, what do you mean? Like, all right, did you just fall asleep sunbathing with shades on again?
Why are you such a cunt? Why are you like this, man?
It comes to me naturally, I don't know.
I don't. No, but it's like I think there's a part in your brain where it's like, okay, that's two jokes that haven't landed. Quick, go to Old Faithful, call out the plate.
Overriding empathy. And then just goes like, right, just talk about people's looks again. Back to school it is.
I still remember when we were doing, which one was it? It might have been the group stage for Klusioner Poker. And DreamHack had that picture of Flusher. And it was a bad one. It was like when he had his hair slightly longer and he had like the cap on and he had his neck beard. It hadn't quite fully reached his chin for some reason. And it was a bad photograph, no doubt about it. And we were just on the desk doing the segment and it came up when I was like, and doing my hosting. And Flusher's just been imperious in 2015. And you just went, fucking hell, that picture. He looks like he's been holding on to the precious. I remember. I think Fnatic management got fucking well pissed off.
Here's the sad thing. I'll actually reveal this because again, statute of limitations is listening. Yeah. One of the hilarious things, by the way, and I always think this when I see certain community members who are players like laughing and making like mad toxic jokes themselves. Yeah. There have been players and managers who have like actively campaigned to have me removed from events. Now, good luck with that. That hasn't worked for you at all, because guess what? Your team could be shit tomorrow and not at the event. So a tournament organizer doesn't really want to just blow like one of their relationships for no reason and then have me go to their rival and just only work for them. So you haven't really thought that one through, but you know, you gave it the old college try.
Yeah, I think that was one of them. I think that's where Fnatic got upset and they were like, we don't mind Duncan criticizing our performances, but comparing someone to Smeagol Gollum from Lord of the Rings.
He's crossed the line.
That crosses the line. Gollum is the line. The line is Gollum, mate.
It's a way that's the move as well. Like, is this the generation we live in? Oh, people are making fun of this guy for the way he looks. Well, better just make everyone in the world stop saying that then. Have you never thought of just handing him a fucking Lorraine lettuce or something, you daft cunt, and telling him to go for a sprint instead of getting on his Segway or whatever the fuck?
Segway?
When has he ever
been on Flusher?
Because
it's Flusher. He uses all technology that's available to him.
Yeah. All right. He's brought back. He's lifting. Right. Okay. Let's talk about FaZe, shall we? Should we just move into FaZe talk?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, FaZe are. Their era never happened, did it?
And adding exists hasn't really fucking helped, has it?
No.
Who knew? Who knew? Why? Who my God, why?
I know. It wasn't good. I mean, I suppose contextually you can say, oh, first event with exist and, you know, they had some tough games, but
I have to say though, Rich, this is a problem. Yeah. I noticed they said this stat on the desk. I think there was some stat like 14 of the 16 teams there had a roster move. So the problem is, it is a bit whack that for every team we are going to have to add that caveat. Because even though it's true, at the same time, if everyone makes a roster move, it does sort of even the ground up a little bit. You know, you're not just playing against established teams. So unfortunately, that's what makes it so tough rating this event, really.
It was, true. But if you look at who they lost to, I thought it was kind of interesting. Start the tournament strong, you know, they batter Envious, to be expected. But then, like, the Cloud9 one was a bit of a surprise for me because I kind of felt, the FNS iteration of Cloud9 might take a while to get going, that it was going to have to be a bit more meticulous in its execution rather than relying on firepower. I thought Rush had a brilliant tournament, by the way, in that regard. And Cloud9 have been punched a little bit above their weight for me since FNS joined. I've actually been pleasantly surprised, in particularly with Skadoodle. It's almost as if what we talked about, how FNS might be able to micromanage him a little bit better than past in-game leaders, it's actually working for him. I mean, since this comeback, which he was only out the team for 2 days, it seemed, he definitely seems to be performing much better. But, you know, maybe we don't even bother getting into that. But FaZe, like, they lost to Cloud9, pretty close series overall. Exist, not good in that. Cloud9 saw how they missed the bullet firsthand, because keep in mind, Cloud9 had talks to bring Exist in. Yes, you dodged that one. And then what eventually knocked them out of the tournament was they played Astralis and they got manhandled, ultimately, FaZe. And it was very interesting. The system that really should be in place for a team like FaZe that isn't is now in place for Astralis, quite clearly. And when they came head-to-head, it just showed that, you know, they had Nico on Toast. They knew exactly sort of how to counter him. Carrigan didn't really have impact. Obviously, there's always this element when the Astralis players play against Carrigan. They really want to do well. It gives them a little extra bit of psychological motivation. But let's be real. If Nico goes missing, you are expecting Guardian and Rain to basically carry you to victory. This FaZe era, it's just over for me right now. Like, Exist is almost like the last fucking carving on the tombstone.
What's sad is this move right now looks more like FaZe before they got all the big star players, where it's like I can remember that lineup when they first got Nico. Like, it was an okay lineup. You added Nico. Nico was playing amazing. They became one of the best teams in the world. But they became one of the best teams in the world with the caveat that you have to now get everything out of Kiyoshima and Alu, because you haven't got like the maddest lineup ever. You've got some star players, you've got some good players. And now that's where actually I feel like everyone's forgotten about Carrigan and his actual ability as an in-game leader, because with all the lineups where he didn't have the best players, and well, he's fucking killing it. He was getting so much out of everyone. He's finding out their best role and how to use them. Now the problem is, when you go back, it doesn't look like they've gone back. They still think they can play like, oh, I've got all the best fraggers. We just turn them loose and they'll run all over everyone. They're not doing that, mate. I mean, yeah. Nico was amazing at this event, but even he had his massive problems against Astralis. And as he's saying, when he goes missing, you're just not going to win, unfortunately, with this squad. And so I don't know what Exist is supposed to be bringing to the team, to be honest. It just seems a bit pointless to me.
Yeah, I've had a bit of an epiphany, honestly. I think I've tapped into something that I've never really realized before. I've talked a lot about Carrigan as an in-game leader and how he's a great in-game leader for managing teams that have large egos, large personalities. I always thought it was because, and it certainly is to some extent, I always thought it was because Carrigan's very intelligent, very articulate, understands how to blend personality types, very good at diffusing conflict. And what he does is he comes in with his idea about how it should be played, but he puts his ego to one side and he invites input from his players. That was his undoing back when he was at TSM. The players had lost confidence in the system. There was too much input, ridiculous situations where players were saying, we don't want to play what is clearly our best map. Fuck you. Carrigan trying to say, oh, but please, guys. He wasn't being authoritative enough, and that's what kind of got him pushed out. And I'd said in a previous episode of the podcast, I see that happening again. I'll tell you what's going on right now. This is why he's good at mitigating egos. He is letting the lunatics run the asylum again, quite clearly. There is none of this tactical system I associate with previous Carrigan teams. As you said, whenever Carrigan has a bunch of fucking dog's bodies or underhyped players, he says, listen, Kiyoshima, I brought you back from the dead. Like, practically, literally, I have practiced necromancy to resurrect your fucking career, to get you in this team, and you will do all of the shit I tell you to do. You will play in all of the roles I tell you to do, and it's going to work. And it did. And it's the same with, you know, guys like Alu. It's like, look, you know, you're good enough where I can get something out of you. That's when Carrigan actually shines. Every time he has world star players, the wheels start to come off, and the wheels come off because I think he lets them basically dictate too much about how they should play. And that's one of the downsides in Counter-Strike, unfortunately, esports in general, where big personalities, big egos, big brands, and big talent come to the fore. It's very hard to be a leader. Like, think
it's
about
also the, why you can't really have these super teams generally.
Yeah,
you
know, that's why it's because, never worked, right?
Yeah, because part of the... This is one of the reasons why, okay, years and years ago now, it must at least be 2 years ago, I did a video where I basically outlined what was my sort of model of how a Counter-Strike team works. And I did within the video say there's a caveat, you know, because I gave the analogy that it's like football. So traditionally, you have always built a football team on a 4-4-2 formation with two strikers, two wingers, two midfielders, four defenders, goalkeeper. But we all know if you have an amazing player who's a midfielder, he's also wicked at scoring, you might put him as like a drop back striker or something, have a 4-3-3. You know, the point is, depending on your personnel, yeah, you'll mix it up. But there is a traditional model which is tried and tested and works for a good reason. It's just, it's a good way to have enough of the scoring talent while also having playmaking, but at the same time, not too many strikers that you don't have enough defenders. There's a logic to it and a balance that like transcends any current team using that system. So I did a similar video where for Counter-Strike, I had the philosophy where it's like, you want one superstar player, you can have another one, but he has to understand that in some sense he is the secondary star player and has to give up a little bit, knowing that we're going to, and then you have the middle player, I call it the second hybrid or third star, and then ideally you want him to be like a midfielder. Either he has a bit of like attacking nous, in which case we're going to be like a phase and turn them loose a little bit, they're going to attack and I'm going to like let them do what they want, or I'm in a team where I only have a couple of star players. So I'm going to go the other way. He's going to be more of a guy who's working with the rest of the squad. He's going to be like a Zitnik's, an overpaid guy who should be a more skilled player, but he's going to play more of a supportive role. And when I designed this system, part of the reason why I'm actually convinced to this day it will always exist in Counter-Strike, and this is why I told you on a past episode, I actually did do an interview, which sadly was never released, right after FaZe had 15-0 wrecked that... ESL New York, and I said, yeah, I didn't believe that they would be the team that would dominate everything. This is one of the reasons why, is because what's great about that type of a system is, yes, obviously, in theory, you could have a team with no star players, and you could just have such amazing tactics that you did the right tactic every time, you got all the 2v1s you wanted, all the trades, and you win the game. But it's going to take like perfection in that system. You're going to need absolutely everything. Likewise, you can go the other way. You can have so many star players that, you know what? If three of them turn up in a game, it's over for the other team. Doesn't matter what they do. They get their heads fragged off. But again, now you're relying on these three star players to do that, but in at least some minor sense, connect to each other. So they're not just disparate elements of me killing two people here, but we don't go there and that's open and they rotate a player. It didn't matter anyway. There's got to be some semblance of team play. So to me, the reason why these sorts of teams are always going to be a nightmare to run is because the good thing about having that sort of a structure is everyone knows which way their bread is buttered. If you are playing in a Kenny S team and you don't make sure he has an AWP and he's set up to do what he wants to do and then give him the leeway to do what he does, you're just wasting your best talents. Like, it wouldn't actually make sense to have all the superstars of France in one team. That's why I always thought, actually, LDLC was a bit up and down when they had that squad and was sometimes underwhelming, you know, because you would think, all this talent and you're not winning. That's one of the problems. And so the worst thing is, when you have the one big star, not only does everyone know, got to cater to him, but also it's more likely because of the team structure that naturally you're going to have an element of team play. When you have like three star players like FaZe does, this is where star players can be actually just cunts, to be fair. Because the thing about star players is they want you to say, no, give me the reins. Let me do it. I'm the star player, so I know what I can do. So you know what you do? You go on then. Do it. And then they're winning, right? And then they get into a game that's a really tough game. And you know what? Their aim's not working in this game and they're not getting kills. And what do? Do they go, well, I asked for the responsibility, so you guys just get on my back and I do they fuck? What they do is they turn around and go, why aren't you calling tactics? Why don't you set us up and call us something? And then when they lose a game, I'm not specifically talking about FaZe players. I'm not talking out of school or something private. But I can tell you from knowing teams, there are players who are your favorite player right now, everyone watching, who is some superstar player and would one of the best players in the world. And they will, after a game where they themselves got like, you know, 18 kills in two maps, go, it's a fucking in-game leader, you know, he didn't call any right strats and he messed them up. It's like, well, you weren't helping, were you? You know what I mean? It's actually a nightmare to be in Carrigan's position because that, like, basically, yeah. even said this to me himself, you can only win. When you have that caliber of player, you must win. Anything other than victory, not only will you get mocked for not winning, but people will say, as they already do, oh, insert any other in-game leader and they'd have won this tournament, which no one can ever know, obviously, which is even worse.
Well, this is the thing. Unfortunately, I think what we're looking at here is basically Exist is going to sort of be filling some void, right? Like until either Olaf Meister comes back or they get an actual star player, you know, who deserves to be on the FaZe roster, not some sort of makeshift cheap pickup that they've done for reasons beyond me. When FaZe must have more fucking money than almost any organization in the scene right now. So why you would want to cut corners now? Just at the point where you were still making finals. You're not making finals with this lineup. Sorry, Exist is too much of a downgrade. Even Olaf Meister playing clearly distracted and not up to his full capacity is a much better player than Exist not playing to his full capacity for multiple obvious reasons. So why they didn't spend the money, especially when it was evident that you could have picked up Simple. It's not as if Na'Vi is saying he's not for sale. What they're saying is, you will just have to pay a ridiculous amount of money, take Flamey for some reason on an indentured servitude contract, and you will get him in 2 months because we're just going to be awkward pricks about it. You know, if I was FaZe right now, I'd be like, yeah, all right, then fine, fuck it. I'll wait 2 months to get the best player in the world in 2018 on this roster for any amount of money. I don't care if you have Flamey bringing them cups of fucking tea at halftime. Like, it don't matter. We'll do whatever we need to do. Unfortunately, what's going to happen now is Exist is going to go out of the team. There'll be a post. Oh, thanks for all your help. You really gave it your best. Olaf Meister will probably come back. That's not going to work. Then they maybe go out and try and pick up another player. That's not going to be Simple Caliber or anything like that. And basically, Carrigan's going to get Shanghai'd out of this team again. It's going to be TSM all over again for him. And then FaZe is just going to crumble and fall apart. I will go on the record now. I'll say it on this podcast. People can come in. I don't think, with maybe one of these weird Tier 2 tournaments aside, FaZe will not be in the final of a Tier 1 tournament again in 2018. It's done.
I mean, they look terrible at the moment. And also, I have to say, for anyone who's been living that dream that FaZe was just going to keep the same team but kick Carrigan, that ain't going to work. Like, I can barely even think of anyone who I would say put in instead. Like, I know everyone's going to be like, no, what about Fallen and all them? Have you seen what Fallen's doing with his own legends at the moment? He's not fucking killing the game. Glaive only just got it all back together with Astralis and actually has such an opposing, diametrically opposed system. I don't even think the Nikos of this world, no matter how much they might say they want to play under it, would actually want to play under it. I think they just want to change. So I have to say, when they do that move, which I agree with you, that'll be the move that happens, sadly, is the star players will all get together and, without saying it, we'll all agree, well, we're not going to take the blame for this, so let's just kick the leader, shall we?
Yeah.
I actually reckon whoever they get in, they'll go downhill. That team will become nothing. Yeah. And this is where players are so short-sighted and have such a short memory, it's ridiculous. If I was a sports psychologist and I was working with FaZe, I'd literally just tell Nico, remember where you were a year and a half ago? You were in a nightmare scenario where you could play the best game of Counter-Strike in the world and you had chance to win a tournament. Yeah. So now you're in a team where, what, you're going to tell me you've got problems with this team? What, you haven't got good enough teammates now? You haven't got a good enough in-game leader now? There is no greener grass, mate. Those teams that are beating you aren't better. Their team just gels better, that's all. They haven't got better players, better in-game. You know, none of those factors. It just looks like that when you win. I mean, remember, we just saw the Bolts lineup was winning everything. One day later, boom, can't make a fucking top four to save their lives. So people massively overrate that. They always do in Counter-Strike, sadly. Success just breeds this myth that you've cracked the game, you've solved it, you know. So, yeah, FaZe is just a nightmare scenario at the moment. Like, I don't know what hope you can hold out for them. They've still got the firepower where, I mean, this is what's going to be mad. For me at the moment, now they're going to become a dangerous upset team, which is obviously what you should never be if you've got this level of talent. Because Rain, Guardian, Nico, you can definitely beat a Mouse Sports, whoever it might be, Fnatic. You could beat these teams in a best of three. Problem is, are you the favorite to win the tournament? And they go, fuck no. Especially not if it's actually going to be the Astralis we just saw now. Like, that is your fucking reckoning as this team.
Yeah, definitely. Look, let's talk about Mousesports. It was my pick to win the tournament, and we'll be able to segue into talking about Na'Vi, who made it to the final, pretty much predicated on all the same shit. But let's just talk about Mousesports. For me, if Mousesports, and I tweeted this out, I think, so it's certainly accountable. If Mousesports had won this event, they would have been the number one team in the world right now on current form. I'm not saying it would have been a legacy. I'm not saying we would be entering the Mousesports era. I still think Mousesports are a top three team in the world right now, no doubt about it. I think they're very, very good. But they couldn't have got a better bracket to certainly go all the way to the final. And I don't care what anyone says. I think Na'Vi are there for the taking. There was a couple of points I'll bring up about Na'Vi, but let's just talk a little bit about Mousesports. Really strange series, because when I saw the map veto sort of come out, it was obvious Na'Vi were going to get Inferno. They got Inferno. I always back Na'Vi to win Inferno right now. I think that's like their one silver lining, if you like. Other teams are not up to their level on Inferno. There's like maybe one or two who can hang with them. Na'Vi are a phenomenal Inferno team. You add all of the simple element to it, then they're a ridiculous Inferno team. But it's almost as if Inferno somehow neutralizes the nightmare of Zeus and Edwards for some reason. They always seem to be able to get a win on that map. But they got, Mousesports got battered on Mirage. And it was just, I don't know, it was just really like a flat performance from them. I don't really know how to put my finger on it. It was just like, it wasn't like anybody played particularly bad. It was just like nobody. In the past, we've seen Mousesports meet the level of their opponents. We've seen them step up and take FaZe all the way. We've seen them step up. Whoever they play, it seems to get the best out of them. Unfortunately, Na'Vi just had too much firepower here. This is the first tournament that Electronic has really justified his six-figure price tag. But yeah, Mousesports couldn't hang with Na'Vi. And I think Na'Vi is still a three-man team. I still think Edward and Zeus are just dead weight garbage being dragged along by basically players playing out of their skin right now, especially Simple. Hands down the best player in the world. In fact, I think even if Simple went down a notch and we got to the end of 2018, there's still a ridiculous argument to say he was the best player in the world this year, and we're only 4 months into it. So anyway, just some thoughts about Mousesports falling off, and then we'll talk about Na'Vi. Very disappointed. I don't know if Mousesports wilted under the pressure a little bit, because now they're not the underdog team. Now they are genuinely being talked about as world number one contenders.
They're one of the favorites for this tournament, for sure. So yeah, my big problem with Mousesports is, like, I agree with you. I think they're still a contender for number one in the world as it sits right now, with results and the factors that you have to take into account to decide your number one. They're absolutely in the mix. It's them, Fnatic and Astralis at the moment, basically. The problem for Mousesports, in my opinion, is that I think they're only in that spot as like what I call like a placeholder. Like, they were waiting for an Astralis or a new SK or some team to come along to be dominant who would displace them. Because for me, Mousesports still does have that quality of like the FaZe, poor man's FaZe. Like, they've got these really good players, but you don't get the consistent performances out of any of those really good players. You don't know every map that Oscar's going to go off. In fact, actually, I always say this. For a superstar player, like someone whose ceiling is ridiculous, he is one of the most up and down players I have ever seen. He'll just have a whole half where he does fuck all, doesn't do anything with an AWP, doesn't do any of those crazy moves he does, and you go, where did he go? Where did this guy go? But then that's one of the things people have said about him. He's a weird guy, you know. He doesn't have ridiculous swagger, and he's not one of those guys who believes he's the best player in the world, you know. Then you look at the other players. Rops is still very young, so I don't blame him as much, you know. He's still doing very well for his age. Sonny, this is his first time at the top level. That's the problem they have in their team. They're also poor man's FaZe, in as much as when FaZe got their team together and Guardian was going ham again and Rain was in position, these are all people either in their prime or very established players. The Mouse players, this is their first time being at this level, you know. They, as you're saying, they went from being like, oh, it would be cool if they forced an upset, to like, right, you're expected to win all these matches now like a true professional. Even if it goes badly, even if you lose a half, you got to find a way to pull it out, find a way to win. Like, That's a lot to ask, because that's not about fragging now. That's about things like, how do I play when I'm not performing? How do I switch up my style when it's not working one day? How do I, on a map that I think I got all nailed down, like a mirage, like train, but it's not working, how do I do something different? That's like the extra gear that makes the dominant teams as opposed to just the really good teams. So the difference is the Fnatic and the Mouse of the world, Team Liquid as well, I'll throw them in there. They're really good teams. They're really solid little teams. They're impressive that they've come up this far. They brought players to this level you didn't think to, but they're all missing something. They're all missing, I'm not talking about the title here, but just if you look at them play, they're missing that thing that makes you the dominant team, where you win on a bad day, you dominate on a good day. Like, they're a really good team, but there's something that makes me skeptical about the Mouse Sports team. And then you look at the maps they lost, there weren't any trick vetoes here. This is like right in their wheelhouse. These should have been maps and opponents that they're going to beat. So yeah, underwhelming for me. Still a decent performance. Like, I'll say that. If finishing top eight is what happens, and it takes simple, as we're saying, again, just doing like movie shit to beat you, then fair play. But if you're going to be number one, you have to be able to beat the top teams.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't think Na'Vi are a top team. So look, we'll talk about that. Like, one of the things that people are starting to realize is we've wrecked, well, in particular me, wrecked Edward on this podcast often. People are starting to wake up to the fact that for a 30-year-old experienced veteran, his decision-making in-game is mind-blowingly bad. Mind-blowingly bad.
Here's how you know, Rich, that he is really in bad form and a bad state in his career. This is always the telltale sign. Whenever fans of the player have to brag that the guy didn't completely feed or just made one good play, you're done already. Because the players are like, I don't have to brag to you about the one play they made and tell you, didn't you see that one half? They're just good players. So as soon as they start doing that, that's where it's like a sign that like they're just in that like stage of fucking denial of before they finally come to accept that like this player is over the hill.
I keep saying it. He is good for like one top level performance every 10 games. If you think that justifies being on the same team as Simple, Electronic, Flamey, I don't know what to tell you. He is literally the dead weight that is holding up. No, I said it before. I'll say it again. Yeah, they made it to another final. They are never going to win a tournament. And unfortunately, once you have Simple in this kind of form and you make it to finals, you better close one, because first of all, we know enough about form to know that even if this lasts all year, it's not going to be permanent. And second of all, we also know how often do you make it to finals with these where everything clicks, everything goes your way. You beat teams that are clearly better than you, more consistent than you. This is two finals now. Na'Vi have got to, and Edward and Zeus have basically fucked it. They have absolutely fucked it for their team. And on that point, I'm going to drop something here. And anybody who tries to justify this is a fucking moron and has no place ever articulating or voicing an opinion about Counter-Strike ever again. I've got the tweet for you here. My boy Draken from NIP knows what fucking time it is. And hopefully most people in CS know what time it is.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. It's about not dropping the AK to Simple, right.
You're in the final playing Astralis, who are playing this unbelievable reinvented system. Everybody in form, everybody tactics. The only way you break a system is with individual brilliance, something that forces them to go off script. That is why you must have your best players having the tools to break the machine. That is the only way it will work, right? Fact. I've seen enough Counter-Strike to know that, but it's true of all sports. It's certainly true of Counter-Strike. Now, if you are in a fucking must-win final and you have the best player in the world, not even close, godlike performances from this guy, what the fuck are you doing giving an AK to a dog shit fucking in-game leader who is literally just there because he's a brain, and Edward, who will just run out and die, run through a smoke and die without firing a bullet or throwing a flash? These guns in the hands of Simple will win you a round. The AK in the hand of Electronic or that Edward and Zeus will has a much higher chance of winning you a round. And the argument that is made to justify this absolute fucking stupidity is, but they're better players, so they have more chance of getting a kill with a worse gun. They have more chance of killing a fucking orper or killing anybody with the AK. And what does that do? You thick fucking cunts. That drops a gun on the map that your shit players can then go and get. Have you ever played Counter-Strike? Ever? There is no justification for Zeus having an AK over Simple. That never in any context. Let Simple go and neutralize an AWPer with one bullet because he's good enough. Let Simple go and get a kill on a bomb site and open it up for you because he's good enough. And in getting those entries and picking apart the fucking map, which only a player like Simple can do, you then free up guns for your shit players that do not deserve them. How hard is this to fucking grasp? And you have Zeus, the supposed god-tier in-game leader. He's won a fucking major. And he's got the sack to say, right, Simple, everybody knows you're the best player in the world by a country mile, and I am fucking a terrible, husk of a fucking player. Please drop your gun for me, Zeus. Absolutely outrageous. It is outrageous. People should be incensed. I'll tell you, it shows how far Simple has come as a human being that he's even willing to do it. Because if it was me, I would turn round to Edward and Zeus and say, I don't know if you know what fucking time it is, but it's Simple time. I get the guns I want in the rounds I want. I do the things I want when I want, because I'm carrying your fucking withered old bodies to trophies. Now shut the fuck up, get on my back, and fucking let's go win a tournament. That is what I would be saying. And he doesn't. He says, here's the gun, Zeus. Like, here you go. You're shit compared to me. It's not even close. But yeah, you have the best gun, and I'll see if I can kill five players with a CZ, shall I? And he probably still gets two kills. It is beyond a fucking joke.
Right, here's the thing that triggers me about this, is that this obviously existed before Simple and Na'Vi. So one of the worst examples of it ever was every team Nico has played for, the Bosnian player Nico. Because what used to happen was, right, I've brought this up so many times on desks, and every time I bring it up, I pause for 2 seconds, because I know Janko's coming in, and I know that I'm looking over, I'm going, how are you doing that without moving your lips, Nico? And also, how's your hand fitting up all the way from over there? You're not even next to the desk. Because the old ventriloquist act comes out, and as soon as Janko tells me something about mouse sports or phase, may as well be Nico telling me it. So what they tell you is this, Rich. Same thing you said, a version of that. They go, right, Nico with the deagle, though. Think how good he is, you know. He's so good with the deagle, it's better for the other guy to have the AK. And you know what I always say to him every time? Yeah, even better with an AK, though, isn't he? So that doesn't make any sense. And this is the maddest part about it, right? People will actually say, because I heard people claiming at this tournament that actually Simple himself even told them, like, no, it's okay, I'll stay with this guy and you take the AK. And they were saying, what a great teammate, eh? He's giving his teammate confidence. No, he's not giving his teammate confidence. If his teammate can't play the game, if he has a bad gun, but his superstar, best carry in the world, has the best gun, he has no place being on a professional team. He is selfish, doesn't understand resources in the game. And even worse, there's 2 reasons why this is unacceptable. Because one, Na'Vi is the team in CSGO more than any I have ever seen who have made one AK round by wins from giving it to Simple. He is one of the players who is more capable than anyone of killing everyone on the other. You might not even need a gun yourself. You can just sit back. You need a fucking deck chair and a Savasa and just sit back and watch the show, motherfucker. That's what you are good for, watching demos. You're in a demo. You've got the VIP experience, son. You don't need to be playing the game or distracting us with bullet sounds. And then you add in, the other factor is, if that's real, right, if Simple really is telling his teammates that, first of all, Simple, little pro tip for you here, mate. No matter what way you slice it, your chances to win this round are better if you have the gun. Winning the round and getting the kills is your job in the game. If you win the trophy, at the end, it doesn't matter who had the gun and who didn't. All that matters is you won the trophy. And this is where I actually feel like, this is why I hate and always stand against people calling players toxic. Because while I absolutely agree, Simple has been a nightmare teammate for some of his past teams, it always ends like this, Richard. What happens is eventually the player grows a bit older, gets sick of people telling him all day he's a piece of shit human being, and they always go too far the other way. I saw this happen in League of Legends with that player. Soaz, fucking amazing player. And he spent the last 2 years playing shit champions because, again, to be a good teammate is to give everything of yourself. No, it isn't. That's not what a good star player does. Now, yes, a star player can't be purely selfish, but he has to be selfish for the sake of doing his role the best he can do, which is actually the most unselfish thing you can do in your team, is do your role to your best. So if Simple really is so mind-fucked by all you cunts that he thinks to not have the right gun is teamwork, well, then congrats, guys. You did this. You guys cost Na'Vi tournaments. You, Simple. And by the way, as a final little tag here, because I had a little comment on this today, which I assume this is what he's referring to. So Senya, the guy who used to be a Na'Vi player, used to be a support player for the match, a fabulous player, decorated player, someone who was a great, unselfish player. Because he comes from the world where his role was, I am unselfish. I'm here to facilitate this guy, to have the bad gun, to do this over here. He knows what Simple was like a few years ago. So he tweeted at me saying something like, you know, like, what are you doing? Don't you understand, like, the power your words have? Like, you can ruin everything with these tweets. It's 5v5 CSGO, not 1v1 Quake 3 Arena. If you co-sign the idea that Zeus has to have an AK in his hands to lose the game and feel confident over Simple winning the game, fuck you as well. Like, you also know jack shit about the game, and you're the one ruining the game. You're backing up, like, literally inefficient play in the game, in a team which already had to get everything out of everyone.
Yeah, but this is what's wild about it, though, right? It's like, at a time where we talk about fucking how important it is to sort of put the ego to one side, the only people who have the right to have an ego are those who literally turn up game after game and get it done. And this is true in any sport. Like, you don't mind Kobe Bryant having a fucking ego. You don't mind fucking Michael Jordan having an ego. You don't mind LeBron having a fucking ego. Let them have an ego. Let them be cunts in the dressing room. Let them say to their teammates, listen, just pass me the ball, will you? What are you shooting for? I'll get it done. And they go out and they get it done. And it might make for a weird atmosphere, but you're winning trophies. And let me tell you, when you're popping corks and cashing those fucking big fat checks, all of a sudden, all of that little weird niggly bullshit, it just fades away. The success just washes it away, and it's all good. We are now in a situation where, because Edward and Zeus are so fucking fragile as human beings, they honestly are going to deprive the best player in the world a gun where he can win you around. It is.
Oh, by the way, people always do this as well, Rich. I've had this happen to me. I must have had this accusation leveled at me like every year I've ever followed Counter-Strike. So remember when Smiths was playing terribly in G2? You know why he was playing terribly? Oh, no. What happened is, I'm a time traveler, Rich. I came from the future and the past, rather. I came back before, and then I criticized him when apparently he wasn't playing badly. And then that made him play badly and he lost all his confidence because of me. And you know Dennis from Mouse Sports? Yeah, me again. Wasn't that he was terrible and I commented on that like an analyst. I kept criticizing him and he just forgot all his confidence in how to play the game. And then nowadays we've got Zeus, we've got Edward, it's me again. It's me on Twitter making tweets, and that's making these players just play worse because, you know what, they haven't got any confidence. I've got a crazy idea. Why haven't I got any confidence in you? Because you're garbage in the game. Now, if you're not, if you actually were someone who had a spine, some self-respect, you know what you'd do? You'd go, this guy doesn't know anything. I'll show him. I'll prove him wrong. Now, none of these people do. These people fall faster than Superman on fucking laundry day.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's like I said, right? Like, we've talked enough about this being a prison for Simple. It's a literal contract prison he evidently can't ever get out of, even though he clearly wants to go and play for teams so he can win trophies, as you should when you are in the world best form. But now it's a prison for his play style. Now, when the chips are down and the money's not going round, he is being told that you must have a UMP when there's AKs available. You must have a CZ when there's AKs available.
You know the other detail as well,
but why?
A lot of people haven't seen this, but not only is Simple topping all the frag charts, etc. Now, by the way, here's a perfect example of where that, like, stupid meme about, you know, like, I can't remember which player it was. I think it was, like, Olofmeister, where they were like, Olofmeister gets 30 kills, and I'm like, what? How did he get 30? But I remember the Guardian flick. That meme actually applies to Simple, because Simple gets called zero numbers But you know when Cold Zero did it, and you're like, where did he get all those kills? Like, I never saw any, like, crazy 1v4. All right, he just ground it out. He did, like, two rounds, two kills here, one kill here, and that's great to build a team around. No, Simple is literally AWPing, entrying, killing with CZs, killing with Eagles, killing with Naircut, and he's doing it all himself. He goes entry and does all that stuff. So yeah. He's also probably, if you had to put a list of players, like, he would be in the top five all-time players you would give a gun if you were shorthanded. You'd give him the gun first, because even his style of play dictates that. It's not like it's Kenny S, you know, and it's like, maybe I shouldn't give him the gun because maybe he needs to be set up and he needs to, you know, I'd get map control. No, this is the one player where you can literally just give him the gun and say, please go and try and win me the round.
Yeah, I never thought I'd see fucking Meek Mill get out of prison before Simple. It's fucking retarded. I just feel so sorry for him. And like you say, the community's kicked the fucking toxic out of him so hard, he's now fucking... He's rehearsing for the part of Jesus, for fuck's sake, and Passion of the Christ too.
And this is where it's always like this. No one ever mentions the other players in these teams. What, you thought these guys were all angels and he was the devil? Fuck off. What you find now is, guess who's got an ego? Well, we've figured out, Rich. Zeus. Zeus has got a massive ego. An ego that his player cannot fucking cash the checks for. This guy's out of control. Yeah. Like, not only is he sabotaging his own team, like, if I'm the in-game leader... Why the fuck do I care about kills? I catch trophies, mate. I win the tournament. And then when you say, yeah, you were shit, Simple carried you, I go, who cares, mate? I'm off with this trophy. See you, dickhead. That's how you win if you're Zeus. You don't win by getting, like he did on this game where he, like, top fragged. Who gives a fuck? Congrats. What do you want me to say? You top frag and you lost the game. Wow. Sick. You must be good, I guess. Like, you don't get anything for that. It's worthless. And then you've got to add in that this, sadly, I've experienced this my entire career. Anytime I ever congratulate a team, but it's like one player carried them, all the other players get mega mad at you. I mean, this is one of the reasons, by the way, why in the early days, Taz always disliked me in Counter-Strike. Because as you'd expect, I always mentioned, wow, this Neil guy's so fucking good. And you know what? He's doing it with a team that maybe aren't that good. And Taz and the rest of them, I'm not joking, their egos were so big, they get mad that Neil gets the credit. Like, they think that not only should they get carried to championships, and by the way, yes, play a role in it and be teammates and be clutch, etc. They want to get carried, and then at the end, they want to get all the credit themselves as well. They wanted me to go, oh, no, actually, you know what? I'm an idiot about Counter-Strike. I'm just one of these idiots who looks at the scoreboard. You know what? You all did an equal part. So you know what? Hey, Cuban and Lord, you're just as important as Neo in this team. Like, the ego on pro players is unreal. The sad thing is, because you have these guys, yes, like old Simple, who were so egotistical, it just, it's like, my analogy would be like this. It's like anyone who thinks that the 5-7's a balanced gun in Counter-Strike. It's not. It's just you'll never see it be OP because there's other shit more OP. So you get drawn away from it and you don't notice it because you see the CZ and you see the Tech-9 and you go, bloody hell. But the point is, if we lived in a world where they didn't exist, I guarantee you tomorrow the people would be crying about the 5-7. It's so overpowered, it's unreal.
So... let's talk about Fnatic while we're talking about God-tier players. One of the best players in 2018 for my money, perhaps even just behind Simple in terms of individual level of performance, has been Crims. Crims has been absolutely monstrous. And this Fnatic side that have obviously picked up a couple of trophies with Golden, had that weird thing where we're going to kick him. No, we're not. Yeah, we are. Now he's back. It's all good. They had a pretty good run here. I mean... I watched the NIP game. That series was straight fire. I honestly thought NIP had won. There was a moment on train where it was like Forrest got this sick pistol clutch, you know, with like a one bullet through fucking smoke. Just an amazing play. Forrest, by the way, has been brilliant, sort of putting a final chapter in the who was better over the course of all of Counter-Strike, Forrest or Neo. You would have to probably lean towards Forrest now. But yeah, NIP were really good. But the character that Fnatic had to come back in that game, predicated on this performance by Crims, which was so ridiculously good. Like 70 kills across three maps. He was unstoppable the entire tournament. And it took the tournament winners, Astralis, to basically sort of find him out, pick him apart. Again, it's no coincidence that it's the star players in teams that wilt against Astralis that can't quite post the same numbers. Their system is too strong right now. But I thought overall this was a great showing from Fnatic. They're still heading in the right direction, and they are going to be one of the top teams in 2018, I think.
Yeah, unlike the FaZe example. Like, for FaZe, I didn't give them the caveat that, like, ah, but you did play Astralis in the first round, so, you know, no one could beat them at the moment. No, because in FaZe's case, the way they played in their group was not really acceptable, quite frankly. Like, they didn't look that great. So, meanwhile, the Fnatic one, I can give them that pass. Because here's the thing. They almost won that series against Na'Vi in the group stage, but Simple, as he does routinely now, just pulls out series that would be like, you know, career best for someone else. He does them like three or four times in one LAN, because that's how ridiculous it is. So they almost won that series. They could have been on the other side of the bracket. They weren't, sadly. So they come into the playoffs, as you say, great series against NiP, who looks resurgent, pretty talented team. They were. I don't blame them for losing to Astralis. Astralis just looked unbelievable in this tournament. And that match particularly might have been their best in the whole tournament. Yeah. They just absolutely locked the game down. And yeah, Crims is one of the main reasons why. Because again, this guy, sadly, people like Simple being so insane, is actually drawing attention away from Crims, sadly. Because in a world where we don't have Simple, I'm not joking, Crims would be the top story right now. Because he's not playing in a team with killers. Flusher's not in great form at the moment. Necro's okay. You know, this is like a decent team, but it's not a team that should be contending for titles. It's contending for titles because one guy's like the MVP every game and one of those like mad all-around games. It's not just the frags. Yeah, he puts the frags up. That guy wins clutches for fun. It's a joke, isn't it? Like, what an absolutely fantastic player.
Yeah, and it's good to see him back because, you know, I remember there was that
I think
period...
he's better than he's ever been, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I think you might be onto something there. I remember when... it was like we had that brief period of time where it was like we were all like, oh, Crims is the best player in the world. And it lasted about 2-3 months. And then it was just the Olofmeister show.
Yep.
Right. And then it segued into being the Flusher show. And Crims had that terrible run of form. Like last year in 2017, there were periods where Crims was sore. He just looked like a shadow of himself. But now this is like you say, I think it might be his career best form. And I don't want to take anything away from Crims because obviously when you're a player, you have to raise your individual levels. But certainly what Golden seems to have done, if nothing else, I wouldn't say Fnatic strike me as an amazing tactical team. They've got a very good system in place. They, you know, they're very good on multiple maps. They always seem to be competitive on all of the maps. But what Golden has done, if nothing else, and I'd love to pick his brains and find out how he did it, is coax form out of these old veterans. Because Crims, as I said, career best. JW's actually starting to look half decent, has done the last few times we've seen him, which I haven't said that for so long. I never thought I would say it again. And like you say, Flusher, you're right. He's not doing mouse lifting things. But in terms of, if you think about which tournament was it they won before?
It was kind of Itza where he went. Yeah. They won WSG as well, but it was a bit off on that one.
Yeah, he was a bit off of that one. But certainly, he is good for a clutch, you know, good for locking down. But you know what Flusher's going to... like, Flusher is never going to be a bad player. Like, he's never going to be bad, objectively. He's always going to be good. So I've been really liking what they've been doing. I thought this was a good continuation of their story. The field was just a little bit too tough for them, ultimately. And running up against this Astralis, man alive, this Astralis team... With Magisk in the lineup, it's finally clicked. And what's interesting is, and this was the first talking point I wanted to get into, it really shows that for all this potential that Kierby was touted to have, absolutely the right move to make here. That Magisk has come into the lineup and been...
Well, if you remember, the stupid detail is they didn't want to make this move.
No, I know.
Kierby, you did it, remember? Like, the mad thing is... Kierby forced them into this mad scenario where they got a different type of player. So they were like, we're going to have to rejig our team. And in fact, he's actually made them a better team. That's what's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? He really has. And it's like, if you think about what was going on with Magisk, he went from being that emerging star when he was playing in that sort of weird Scandic mix for SK Gaming. And his career, it was really in a downward trajectory for a while. You know, some of the lineups that he'd played in, it just didn't seem to do him. But now, if you look again, HLTV have these stats. You can see it's just there at a glance. The curve is shooting right back up. He's playing great on an individual level, and finally, I think Glaive has found a way to get a bit more of a I think the key thing with Magisk over Kierby is reliability. Kierby would have these amazing games, but he would also have these games where he was just nothing. It was just completely unreliable, would go missing in big matches. Magisk, you're always going to get something you can use out of him, some level of performance. And I'm actually inclined to say that I think Astralis, this is prime territory for them to go back to being in the number one spot. If they're not already there with this win, the HLTV rankings say they are. I don't know how I feel about just handing it over to them like that based on one tournament. But right now, with SK falling off, with Fears falling off, with question marks about Mouse Sports, with Na'Vi having their deficiencies, with Fnatic still being, you know, it's virgin territory, basically, for Astralis to get in there and be number one again and get another run where they are clearly the number one team for 3 months while everyone else gets their shit together. So what did you make of them?
This actually, as good as Astralis was when they were number one at like beginning of 2017, end of 2016, when they really got going with Glaive, because they were fabulous then as well. They were really good. Mm. It's like the dominance they showed in this tournament. This is the best tournament Astralis has ever played. This is unbelievable. I mean, not only did they lose one map, people were barely getting double digits on them. Then you look at what they played. They had like the whole map pool. Right now, every other team I've talked about, Fnatic, Mouse Sports, Team Liquid, right? One of the problems these teams have is they have like a few good maps. And at the moment it's working because we were living in a world where we had Nuke and Cash and no fucker plays them. Astralis can go anywhere. They even, as you saw in the Phase series, were threatening to play Cobblestone. They didn't ban it. Madness. They made Kerrigan ban it himself. Remember, that's where Kerrigan always gets the edge. So this team, no joke, whether they'll actually play Cobblestone is irrelevant. They can play six maps. It's ridiculous. So if you're this dominant, and also, here's the thing. Yes, obviously Device has been very good again, but it's the team component that is unbelievable. Just as a squad, like this is what you want. This is why I've always felt like it was overplayed when Astralis stopped winning. Because, you know, this used to be like top four every tournament. They still lose in close fashion when SK or a Phase. As always happens with plebs, they always go, yeah, well, you see, Counter-Strike's moved on from tactics and stuff. What you have to do now is just have all fraggers, and your in-game leader has to be a mad fragger. Like, having tactics, and if you've got the players to use them, will never go out of style. It will never go. Like, the reason North is failing now isn't because MSL's shit. It's because the lineup just doesn't work at all. It's more than just his system that's the problem. So right now, this looks like the perfect lineup to use this system. As you're saying, you almost couldn't have cleared the ground for them better to come in and be the dominant team. There's not even that Phase team that was so scary in matches before. They don't even exist anymore. No. Fnatic, they've just smashed Fnatic. That wasn't a problem. Na'Vi is not even winning with a guy playing like career-best tournaments for any other player in history. SK is in terrible condition. Team Liquid's missing something still. Cloud9 has reset themselves. I don't, at the moment, I don't really see who's going to block them. Like, for example, let's say they don't win the next tournament. Let's say it is Mouse Sports or a Na'Vi or someone wins it, right? You'd still say right now, the Astralis team is the favorite to be the one that does go for all the top fours and goes to all the finals and wins most of them. They look primed even after one event. Yeah, to be a fucking amazing team.
And shout out to Device as well. Always consistent.
Isn't it amazing how he always gets back there again?
Yeah, no, I'll say this. For all down the years, we've talked about, you know, Device having choking issues, psychological issues. But, like, I have never seen anybody consistently get their way back to the top of the pile year after year. Think of when we've ever had a whole year in CSGO Pass where Device wasn't one of the top players in it. It's exactly. Never happened. It's
you have
never
to literally
happened.
Go back to when he was like 16 years old or something mental.
Yeah, only 22, of course, as well. And just, I thought, again, it must be depressing to be a Crims or a Device and play in this era of Simple right now, because finally Nico's dropping off, Cold Zero's dropping off. Simple's just fucking unbelievable. Like, I'll say it all the time. I've never seen anybody play at this individual level in Counter-Strike. That includes the Cold Zero era, the Olafmeister era. This is the new high bar everyone's got.
Especially because it never ends. That's the sick thing. Not only are each of the series like above what you expect, but they just keep going. It goes back to back to back. In fact, Simple now has reached such a level, people have to do the opposite of what I said the fans do of the shit players like Dennis from Mouse Sports. Instead of being like, oh, look, the player you said's bad did win one good round, they have to go the other way, Rich, and be like, did you see that one time Simple whiffed, though?
Yeah.
Like, that's like what they have to do to hit on the guy now. Or go with some angle of like, he gets too many resources, and that's why, you know, like, it's like, it's almost like they're all sat around fucking with a whiteboard, like that fucking scene out of, like, what's it, the Prestige. Like, why can't you outthink him and figure out a way he's shit, actually? It's like, well, you can't, can he? He's just amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought Device would have had a good shout for MVP in this tournament if it just hadn't been for the fact that Simple was clearly the best player again at a tournament again and not picking up the trophy. Anyway, we're running out of time, so let's do a little bit of the news that's been going on. I'll try and go in order of importance on the stories. I've got one eye on the clock. So, Optic, weird situation there. We talked about the lineup when it was put together, and it was, let me remember, Config, Gid, Cajun B, Shazam, and Stanislaw.
Yes.
We were like, oh, this is a weird sort of Danish NA hybrid. Had the coach, I'm a Pet. Will this work? You know, and I made the point. So I said, I think Stanislaw had a bit of a tough time in Liquid. I think he was given short shrift. He found himself basically vying for power with the coach who the organization puts a lot more faith in than a player who just turned up. He was stripped of the in-game leadership stuff. And at that point, what happened? So I always thought Stanislaw was dealt a pretty bum hand in Liquid. He basically went all out and said, listen, I'm the in-game leader. It's got to be me. And if it isn't, take the in-game leadership away from me. And the org said, all right, then, yeah, fine, fuck yourself. So that's literally how it went down. So now what's happened with Optic is they've decided to go all Danish. So Stanislaw and Shazam are out. I'm a Pet. The coach has gone with them to make another NA team. So it just goes from bad to worse, in my opinion, for Stanislaw. And now Snappy and Yugi are coming in from Heroic. And interestingly enough, a guy we touted on this show, Ruger, is going to be their coach now as well. So they've even got a Danish coach.
Former North coach, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Former North coach. And I'm super happy he fell on his feet very quickly. But I'm looking at this lineup now. I always thought Yugi was a very good player when he was in Heroic. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen here with Cajun B, because I know Cajun B's moving back to Rifle, so I guess it's nice to have a hybrid player on there as well. You got Gade in there, and I'm not quite sure of roles or anything in this team. It's like they have just thrown together like sort of five good Danish players, and I think there is going to be a lot of work, a lot of the minutiae needs to be worked on. But real talk, yeah. This is a better Optic team for me. I think they've actually made good decisions here. It probably couldn't have been easy for Optic, you know, who traditionally been associated with NA, and they had that mixed European team, and it was a bit of a failed experiment to sort of go all Danish. But yeah, I honestly think, I mean, especially with North shit in the bed right now, they're going to be knocking on the door, you know, and saying, you know, vying for that sort of domestic dominance in Denmark with Astralis. So what do you think of this roster? Potential?
First of all, before I get into the actual players and, like, you know, how they work and the roles, let me just say this. Milk, former, like, director of operations or whatever bullshit title they all give themselves while sniffing their own farts and doing a line of coke off the desk at the fucking org that they all signed for, they're all just basically the GM, aren't they, right? So whatever role he used to play in North, now obviously in Optic, part of the reason they got these Danish players from North, this guy is a fucking gangster. This guy has pulled off the heist of the century, because what he did correctly while he was figuring out how to play eight-dimensional Diddy Kong Racing was he actually sat down and thought, what is the psychology of all these Danish teams right now? I was on North. I've obviously known the Astralis guys, Heroics over there. And here's what he's figured out that's genius, Rich, is when Config was in North, obviously, Config wants to go to Astralis. Yeah. Obviously. But if I'm North and I have Config under contract, I have one rule when it comes to Config's contract. I will never sell it to Astralis. Why would I sell it to my domestic region rival and he is my best player? So what he figured out was, I'll take him off your hands. What? Config wants to leave. I tell you what, send him my way. Listen, I'm putting together a hybrid NA Danish lineup. Listen, I'll be over in NA. I'll be competing in EPL, ECS. You know, I'll go to some lands. This way, you don't lose Config to Astralis and look silly, but he wants out. You want to make everything work. And you know what? Hey, this gives you time, actually, to nick Kirby from Astralis. You could do that, couldn't you? Obviously, didn't know how Astralis would work out. Fair play. Then, on the other hand, he's going to Heroic and he's going, you don't want to lose these players to North. Come on, then they'll be the second best Danish team again. Look, they're obviously doing badly. They're going to kick the players. Sell them to me. Again, I'll be over in there. What's that? Got five Danish players, have I? Fuck y'all. I'm coming for your place, North. I'm coming for your place, Heroic. What's that, Astralis? You better keep going, boy, because I've got all of them. I've got the fucking Voltron now, haven't I, motherfucker? So this guy's just pulled off the heist, hasn't he? It's like, I bet only at the end when they fucking was like, when the Heroic guy was signing the contract, was he like, wait a minute, but that means he's got five, did it? So I have sold the players to the second best in shit. Shit. It's over for him, isn't it? They've done themselves. It's the heist style, yeah. It's only as he's walking out the door, he turned around and said something, you know.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, like I said, I think it's got potential, you know. Like, jury's still out a little bit for me with Snappy. I do agree
with the role part, by the way. That's the part that doesn't make sense, because these all look like players. So at least traditionally, want to be your star player, don't they? So that's the part that I'm a little bit off.
Yeah, so because it's like... They replaced an AWPer and an in-game leader with an in-game leader and an AWPer. So it makes sense in that regard. But it's like, yeah, Cajun B's back on rifles. And then you've got you, like you said, they're all kind of wanting to be a bit more, you know, kind of have the resource. So it's, I don't know. I think there's some fine-tuning on this.
The detail to add, the reason why I haven't been hyping Snappy, like I know a lot of the analysts out there have, is because... How can people be this hypocritical? So you're all going right up MSL's arse every day about the fact that you have the players now, but you're not winning. Look how badly you're doing, right? We all used to love MSL when he didn't have the players, didn't he? When he only had one Kirby to work with. When he only had, he had to bring in a Valde and work him up, you know. We all know that MSL was really good. But then when he got the star players, we all then criticise him because he didn't do it. Snappy's never had the star players. What are you giving this guy hype for? I agree. Give him the hype. Oh, I'd like to see him have a chance. This is a team that's nothing like any Heroic lineup. Heroic always had very set in place. We've got a couple of talents. We've got these players sort of make up the numbers, or this player has to play a certain role. They were always a tactical team. They always had a cheeky little map pool that was a bit better than you probably should expect for their level. So unfortunately, he's in the MSL position again, where now you're giving him a totally different makeup of the squad, and now he has to show us a different side to himself. So if he does it, fair play. I think he deserves a shot at it. I think he deserves a crack. Obviously, MSL's got his own issues, but he hasn't done it yet. So that's the big thing for me, is that I'm not taking Snappy and going, right, well, that's sorted. He's an amazing game. Put that
that's what I mean.
No.
Yeah, jury is very
that's yet to be seen, yeah. So it's a big chance for him, but it comes with a big downside too.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, and it seems that they are going to be going to EU and not focusing on NA. I mean, that goes without saying.
Which absolutely is hilarious. That's like after Milk did the deal. And I'm thinking of Heroic, right? I'm assuming Heroic and North, again, because they've got all this mad corporate money and investment. They've all done that classic thing, like John Romero and fucking Ion Storm or whatever, where you spend half of it on like some amazing looking skyscraper out of billions or something. Like, look at this, esports is professional. I bet after Milk did the deal, right, and this fucking minimalistic designed room where he was in there and once he signed the deal, he went up to the top, the floor above, and because it's all transparent and see-through, he just dropped his kegs and had his shit on the fucking glass above you and then did a fucking optic okay sign through it. So I've made that up, that's not even a real thing. Copyright that, Hex. Okay, I'm optic okay. You're building walls anyway, so anyway he just did that, did he?
Just did that, didn't he?
Whatever.
Why is Milk just having a shit on a glass table?
Because that's what he's metaphorically done to these guys. And he's on a level above them. It all fucking works.
Yeah, all right.
The shit within shit, get as back, he said.
Get back
to the cleaner.
To your toffee apple drink. Just one quick shout out as well. We've been asking some questions about, you know, where Steel was going to end up. Bit of sad news. I had no idea that this was a thing. It sort of puts the Liquid move a bit more into hard context. And unfortunately, Steel's mother passed away. And it looks like one of the reasons why maybe things weren't going great in Liquid. I mean, obviously, that's a massive distraction. And stepping down to sort of spend some time.
And he was living in NA, obviously. So I assume his mother's in Brazil. So, yeah, it sounds like a tough situation.
Yeah, real tough situation for him. So my heart goes out to him. And obviously, you know, he's now announced that he's going to be in Luminosity as a result. So that he's going to be back in Brazil. Just fucking wishing him all the best. We make a lot of jokes on the show, and we talk a lot about like players who have like, you know, golden tickets, or they get unlucky, or, whatever. I just feel so sorry for Still. Like, just what a rough year it's been, like the last 12 months.
He's just had a journeyman career. Remember, for the Immortals run, he was always that guy that you don't want to be, which is the guy where it's like, oh, when they made that player change, you leaving, of course, that's when they had all their success. It's like, that always sucks to be that guy. But if those guys stick with it like he has and they keep going and they don't give up and they keep open their gate, you have to respect that. It's hard work gotten this far.
Yeah, no, and that's what I mean. I think, like, I don't think it's the last we've seen of him, even though joining Luminosity is, you know, a backward step for someone of his talents, especially when you consider you're going down for Liquid. But, you know, family definitely comes first. I hope he's got the right quality of life while he sort of processes everything that's going on. Met Steel a bunch of times. Guy is a super cool dude. One of the nicest motherfuckers you will ever meet. Like, straight up good human being, good professional player. So just, you know, wishing him all the best, and I'm sure he'll bounce back from all of that. Now, we've got one of our questions coming in from one of our patrons as we wrap up the show. So Hyolu, one of our $100 patrons, asks the question, FaZe clearly picked up the wrong player, referring to Exist, but do they need to do a roster swap before Olaf comes back and maybe replace Olaf Meister as well? So back to the great FaZe debate of how you fix FaZe. For me, it's pretty simple. Put your fucking money where your mouth is. Yet again, the super team didn't work out. For me, FaZe was really a roster that, had they gone out and got Stewie 2K, that would have been a thing that I could have seen certainly working. That would have made more sense within their structure and the way they play. But missing out on anybody, right now that it's basically out there as a matter of public record, that Simple can be bought with the caveat you will have to pay grotesque amounts for Flamey, completely not what he's worth, but you must think that in paying for him and Simple, you're ultimately just getting Simple, and you get a very functional player that you might get some use out of. Worst case scenario, you sell him for a fraction of what you paid for him to offset the difference. Now that that is a matter of public record, that you can go out and sign Simple. If you are serious about being the best team in the world, you must go out and get the best player in the world. And it wasn't a flash in a pan. It wasn't a one tournament wonder. Simple is the real deal, and clearly has the desire and hunger to go and play for a better team. So for me, if I was FaZe right now, yeah, you might see you're over-egging the pudding. But come on. Exist is not fit to wear a FaZe shirt.
I think we said this last episode or something. This is the only time in history, because remember, most players like your Kenny S's or your Cold Zero, they do have a lot of context as to why they're the best player, and they would only work in certain lineups and with certain players and, you know, even certain sensibilities around them. Simple is the only player in the history of Counter-Strike where right now it would be the correct move for any team that can raise the money to sign him to their team. Except maybe Astralis. I'll give them the one out, I guess. Because right now, they're about the only team it wouldn't make sense to sign Simple to. It doesn't matter if you go, it's like I said in the last episode, let's say in FaZe you go, yeah, but we've got Nico. Get Nico the fuck out the way then. Well, there's your problem solved. Tell him he's second best, isn't he? What do you want?
Yeah, exactly. The idea as well, though, that, like, you know, the big defining thing about FaZe and how good they were, why they were getting to finals, why they were winning trophies. The great unknown was always Rain. It was always going to be, could Rain do all of these? Rain's the best player on the team. I mean, that's the reality, is Nico's dropped off. Certainly in terms of importance to producing results, Rain is the most important player on that FaZe roster. And people come try and play it down, or, you know, oh, but yeah, Nico's got that. Right now, it's all about Rain. It's Rain and Guardian, pretty much. Map dependent, but certainly for me, Rain. Now, with that in mind, Rain is a player who has shown his versatility. What you need now is to go out and, instead of getting an Exist who's like some weird role player, is he a fragger? Is he this? Is he that? Is he a secondary, like, mid-round caller? Nobody really knows why Exist is there. Exist probably doesn't know why he's there. I bet when the talks fell through with Cloud9, he was like, fucking hell, it's never going to happen for me.
And Fnatic, remember, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Fnatic, he's like, fucking hell.
Well, that's my chance is gone. Yeah. Fuck, what am I going to get now? Epsilon. Yeah, all right, yeah. All right, Carrigan.
Yeah, guess I'm going to be playing in Godsend. Fucking fail! 1 second. Fucking hell. I reluctantly accept your contract.
I'd have to hear the terms.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, do you have a transparent ceiling? And can I have access to the room?
You know what I mean, though?
It's that's like the new power move. That's the new power move. Is going above someone's building and shitting on the ceiling.
I bet, you know. I don't know.
One day we'll do a live episode and I'll close like that.
Oh, please. Yeah. And to all our $100.
And does anyone have a question? Do you ever think Dennis from Mouse Spots? Wait there a second. That is better than Dennis from Mouse Spots. Now I'm out. See you all next year.
But yeah, so for me, FaZe just got to go out and spend again. Unfortunately, you know, the team was good, but it wasn't that good that you could afford to cut corners and get makeshift players in. They need to commit to it. And clearly there's something up with Olaf Meister. No one knows what the fuck that is, by the way. So I guess we got to find out. But for me, replacing Olaf Meister wouldn't even be a bad idea at this juncture in the team's life cycle. Anyway, Sam, hit me with the titles.
Pretty far up on the Skype. Oh, there we go, mate. You could scroll as well. There we go.
I'm not doing
I'm not scrolling, mate.
I've had to listen to Duncan tell me about how he wants to fucking shit on people who give him money for fucking 30 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? You know, give me a fucking break.
All the metaphors.
All metaphors. Have you watched that documentary about John McAfee, by the way, that gringo?
No, he's a beggar, though, isn't he? He's a beggar, interesting guy. Yeah, I'll have to watch it. That sounds great. I know,
it shouldn't, though. It's all fabrication. It's nonsense. It's the documentary equivalent of a hit piece, and here's how I knew. I was watching it because I was stuck in bumfuck Indiana for like a week. Nothing to do except watch movies on my laptop, so I was watching it. Anyway, there was this scene, right, where John McAfee was like, they were building it up. He goes, oh, he's balling out of control in Belize. And he had an army of young lovers, right? And I'm like, aye. Now, some of them are rough as fuck, by the way. Like, you're just like, why? And you remember he's like late
60s. He's like a 50-year-old guy or something. Yeah. He's
well old. So you think, well, fuck it. You know what I mean? Whatever. You take it where you can. But then they built it up and they were going, so how did John McAfee like to have sex? And I was like, strange question. And it cut between all of them. And they all said the same thing, like uniformly. This is why I know it's bullshit, right? Because it just doesn't work that way. All the women said what he would do is he would lie underneath them and they would be in a hammock, right?
Shit
and
on
he
top
would
cut them in a glass ceiling.
he would cut a hole in the hammock. And I was like, oh, this is baller, right? He just lies back, has sex with him through a hammock while he's like writing anti-fucking virus software with one hand. That's pretty baller, right? But then they all just said, and then he would make us shit through the hole into his. And I was sorry. And they all said it, right? And the woman's going, did he ever have regular intercourse? And they went, no, never. Not. Come on. Who gets 70 years old and goes, you know what? Sex don't do it for me no more. Start shitting in my mouth.
Also, that's just so implausible logistically. What's he doing? Just feeding them Weetabix 24/7? How are they doing that every day? What if they can't do it?
Bring in the next one.
But that's what you should do. That should be Weetabix's advertising campaign, mate. Like, want to get your daily scat fucking intake?
Hey, man, need to get your rocks off?
Why are you selling it like a fucking
and then he's eating it. And then he's eating it like...
By the way,
chewy.
We are available for sponsors.
Weetabix, if you want to get in touch.
If anyone wants to write after them. Right, let's fucking...
From Weetabix or plexiglass, contact me. We can make some magic.
Or Windex. Right, let's get the fuck
out. If you know anyone who makes hammocks.
Thanks to $100 patrons, Detlef Insomniac, Chris Enwin, Hyolu, Ruxon, Jerky's Minion, our $50 patrons, the Archangel Varau, Carter Daniel Plamenov, it runs on. Carter is a separate dude to Daniel Plamenov Yordanov. Vexi, Nastrodamus, Andreas Snazor Westerland, Marcus Kyunpar, Madsen, Mama Jama Hennessy, Keith Miller, Benakagi Assassin, and William Southern. That was by the numbers. I wish it wasn't, but it was. We'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, take care of yourself. I'm off to get a glass table.